The Preston and Steve Daily Podcast is presented by Acme. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors, and the official supermarket of MMR's Preston and Steve Show.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Who here in the studio is on their period?
Nobody.
Steve? Yeah.
No.
Ladies? We have some ladies in here. Anybody? Yeah, we have one. Listen, the reason I brought it up that casually is because some of the stigma is continuing to dissipate amongst women who are at that time of the month. And Steve sent me this article from the New York Post.
I saw it today. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I never thought of this. Apparently, some parents are having the idea to throw a period party for their teenage daughters.
What?
When they have their first period.
Yeah. What do you think about that? Because they serve red velvet cake, which is awesome.
For years, we talked about this, that there was that commercial where it was like where the young girl, you know, got her period for the first time and her parents were like, well, let's celebrate. We'll go for ice cream. There was some sort of commercial.
There was some sort of commercial back
in the day where they were, pretty much celebrating it.
Okay.
Hey, why don't we go for some ice cream or something?
Steve, actually, the party favors include packs of tampons, sanitary towels, uterus-shaped cakes, cakes that will be red and
I'm sure red velvet, right? The whole purpose of sort of diminishing, as you said,
the stigma.
Years to come.
Listen, it's not fun. I know. And
part
of the reason they're doing this, Kathy, is because, and listen, I have a young daughter. She's 11 years old. We're going to be getting there. We're going to be getting there soon. And they're... Girls can be scared of this.
Well, so I
look
think,
at Carrie, for Christ's sake.
She was vilified.
She freaked out, absolutely. She saw what she did to her prom.
I think that
burned the whole goddamn thing down.
That part of it is that for sure. But then there are also, I think, the girls that go a little bit later. So, like, you're almost waiting. Everybody has it. All your friends have it. And you're the last one. So then when it comes, that would be when you would get the cake. You finally got it. You can join the rest of them.
Right. So at that level, Preston, I guess, though it's much less painful and just more surface stuff. Pubes, getting your pubes is sort of a quasi rite of passage at a certain level.
For a guy, it's nothing that you have to clean up.
Amongst young ladies, Kathy, that's sort of unspoken. You're late to the party, so to speak.
Yeah, like I was late to the party, so at that point, I fully understood it, and I was okay with the fact that I didn't, because everyone was like, "You don't want this. Happy that you don't have it for so long."
But Steve, you're right about that. I didn't think about that because I was late getting my pubes.
Yeah,
and I was self-conscious about
it. Sure,
it was even like armpit hair.
How late?
Was late getting that. Case, I don't remember the age. Maybe eighth grade or something like that.
Oh, dude, I didn't have armpit hair until I was well into high school.
What about pubes?
Pubes. All right. So I sprouted my first pubes in sixth grade.
Do you remember when you got your first pube? I did.
Oh, I was like,
oh my God.
There it is.
But that was in eighth grade when I got my first pube. Not armpit hair.
But pube. Also, like, so I had my first pube, but again, I didn't fully sprout until I was well into high school.
The penis just didn't grow.
Yeah.
That's weird when your pubes are longer than your...
Yeah.
I will tell you this. It was embarrassing enough for me that I would not... There was a guy who would film us for money in town.
I
would not go
please,
over.
Would you shut up?
No. Actually, I was kind of right on schedule with that. But it's still something that everyone, at whatever level, you're going through the formative years.
Yeah, puberty,
if you perceive yourself as being a late bloomer or whatever, it's going to wreak mental havoc with
you. Breast growth as well for women, that's a thing.
I'll tell you what I was terrified of for a long time, tampons.
Yeah. Listen, okay, I can imagine that. I couldn't
swallow them.
When I was a kid, you don't swallow.
Oh, you don't?
No. They'll choke.
They're not marshmallows?
When I was a kid and I was probably in maybe like fourth grade, third or fourth grade or whatever, my sister was going through that. She's older than me. And I remember... Man, we were like coming home from church or something like that. And in the car, I found a little instructional, I guess it comes with the tampons or whatever.
Yes, yeah.
And it showed the diagram on how to use it. I'm looking at this, I'm like,
what is this?
We need to go right back to church.
And I'm like, you will not believe
what your daughter's doing.
I didn't say anything, but I knew that this was for my sister. And I'm like, what? what is this all about? And then I'm like, she has to do that?
No. Well, and so the worst part for me was swimming because I was a diver, you know? So once I was old enough where I got this, I then for a week would not go swimming. So,
well,
you know,
sharks.
But my mom was like, listen, you have to learn how to do this. Like, I can help you. I can show you. I was like, get the hell out of
what
here.
You're grade not were you in?
Showing
your
me.
Sure. Yes. And your mom is as a, but I mean, still, I'm sure you're scared crapless and uncomfortable, and it's got to be weird. So maybe there's
blood.
Maybe to this point,
well,
the party, though it is kind of weird, if that helps, then maybe that's a good thing.
I'm not opposed to it. Yeah. Period parties, if you're just tuning in, that's what we're talking about.
I'm not opposed to it, but why? I don't
well,
understand.
Then I think you need to throw pube parties.
I just talked about that.
Yeah,
Preston, the pube party has to be part of it, too.
That's not a bad idea.
Kath, what grade were you in when it finally came?
Oh, I was... Oh, my gosh. I forget. But I was, like, well into... Like, my friends got it around middle school. Like, I was definitely into high school. Like, maybe ninth grade, end of ninth grade.
Okay.
Okay, right. So two things real quick. Apparently, Bert Kreischer threw a period party for his daughter. A bunch of people are texting and letting us know that. So I was trying to find the video, but I guess he did it about a...
We got
to
see if we can get Bert.
My guess is there was booze.
He posted, I doubt it, for, like, a 12 or 13-year-old daughter. Yeah. But
for him.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
I was looking for the video. I don't know. And then secondly, Kathy, about the tampon versus pads. I had a friend in college. This was, you know, she was 18, 19, 20 years old who was very religious and found, and I'm going to word this delicately, but a tampon was almost like losing her virginity.
Too invasive.
Wow.
Too invasive. And so she used pads throughout college.
Listen, once I figured it out, that was the way to go. But I still I have a friend of mine has two kids. She has gone through childbirth and she still can't use a tampon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, why?
She just like it freaks her out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But she was able to push two kids out.
Right.
You know?
So my friend, when she was growing up, and I thought this was weird at the time, when she shaved her legs for the first time, her mom was there with a camera taking
pictures.
That
was a huge deal. My mom didn't want me to shave my legs because she said, once you do it, that's it. Like forever.
What will the other Sasquatches think?
Listen, but I remember the exact first time that I shaved my legs because I was with two other girls. They were older than me and we were going, I want to say like roller skating or something. And we were in their car getting ready to go.
We need romantic music.
No. It wasn't like that. And the girls, we all like had our legs up on the seat. And I remember looking at my legs and being like, oh my God, there it is. My hair on my legs is way too long for this. And they lived right down the street from me. I ran home, shaved my legs, went back, and went roller skating
with
my friends.
Your legs are so hairy.
You have very hairy legs. What kind of creature are you? Do you want to be taken to our leader? Had you had any instruction? Did your mom help you to just go in with the razor and shaving cream? And you pretty much, you know how it works,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I knew how it works.
It's not like you need an instruction.
My mom just said, listen, once you do it, that's it. Like, you can never stop. Then, you know, it's just going to continue to grow.
What about your armpits? Shaving
that
those.
I don't remember. Don't remember.
Not as big a deal?
No.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah. A lot more surface area on the legs.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it's interesting. You remember we've had this discussion before, not about period parties that are apparently becoming more prevalent. Instead of throwing more peas
period
in
parties
there.
Are prevalent.
Yeah. But you remember we've had women call in and say that when they had their first period, that their mother smacked them in the face.
Yeah.
Oh, that was
it was some kind of a religious based thing, or it's
wasn't that
like
the Italians
for? Yeah.
I thought it was because you called gravy sauce.
No. Well, that's another issue as well. No, but there's some kind of archaic thing where you have to cause pain or something like that. I don't know what it is, but it was strange.
You gotta be cool to be kind.
Yeah, in the right measure.
I'm bad, so bad.
Let me go to Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie. You're on the air. Good morning.
Thank you
for calling in, Stephanie. What's up?
So I'm 39 years old, and my first memory of my period was my mom getting me a dozen roses and my parents and my brothers, because I have an older brother, younger brother, taking me out to dinner. So I think these period parties, I don't know about a party, but great because, you know, my first memory of my period is getting flowers. It's not a horrid, oh, my God, I'm bleeding and cramps. And, ugh. It's actually a good memory of, you know, becoming a woman.
That's pretty cool. So that set in your mind as a, listen, it's the thing itself is not so thrilling, but you weren't traumatized by its arrival.
Exactly. And I plan on doing it with my daughter. I mean, she's four, but I plan on doing it with my daughter because, you know, I have friends that are all have kids that are getting their period, and I'm sharing my story with them, and they're like, oh, well, that's great, because they're all like, oh, my first period was horrible and everything like that, but my memory is great. And
so, Stephanie,
I'm doing that with mine.
You think you're going to do like that? You're going to do like a dinner? You seem to not be down with the party concept.
I don't know about the whole period party. I mean, everybody's making parties for anything.
I know. I know. We were talking about that. It's almost too many parties, but I think a nice dinner with the flowers, I think that's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Right. And I said, that's what I plan on doing. It was a great memory for me, and I plan on keeping going with my daughter.
Yeah. When you have to hire a clown, you've gone too far.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, I think maybe the term party is a bit much. It might not mean inviting 25 people over. It may just be, you and a couple of friends and your family, and that's it. You know, I don't know.
Because, there's going to be period party planners that you're going to have to hire.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, last year, 12-year-old Brooke Lee from Florida made headlines after her mom, Shelley, threw her a period party. Lee was given a chocolate cake decorated with red icing as well as a pizza, pads, and tampons. Shelley revealed that she organized the event after Lee confessed that she was worried about starting her period. She said, I wanted to make this event a little more fun. Later, Lee's 17-year-old cousin, Autumn Jenkins, shared images of the event on Twitter. Caption, Brooke started her period today, and my family is super extra.
Super extra. Yeah. Not just super extra.
Super extra.
As you go through puberty, did you get acne?
Yeah, but not bad. I got zits. I got pimples.
Anything like
acne.
That, though, makes you freak, though, right?
Oh, I mean,
your body's changing, and you just freak.
Sure, absolutely.
And did you have an uncomfortable period of time, a la Peter Brady, where your voice is cracking and changing?
Not that I remember.
Or were you always this...
I was just my
mellifluous.
My issue were pubes and being skinny.
Okay.
Because I was really like borderline frail. I was so skinny. You know, I took liver pills to try and gain weight.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And this was up until I was about like 18. And then once I started drinking, I didn't have to worry about being skinny anymore.
You had to run around in the shower to get
Budweiser
right?
Took care of that.
Budweiser, you created a monster.
I was drinking Stein. And in fact, this was last year, a charity called Bloody Good Period and the Cup Effect teamed up to host a huge period party. This is in the UK. The group said, over the course of an evening, we'll cover all you need to know about the cups, fannies, and periods. By the way, they call the front fannies over in England.
Oh, really?
Do they?
Yes.
How backwards.
Yep. About cups, fannies, and periods in a small group of awesome, like-minded babes. Said the group. Hmm. So they had a big event where a lot of people could come to it.
Listen, I guess this is better than the alternative. And also at that age, if you get it at the wrong time,
it's a little
like at school or school. A la Carrie, where, mm-hmm.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah.
Because the little boys, they don't know. And
the worst they do is crap their pants.
Yeah. Which, maybe they should do that in honor.
Crap party.
Yeah. Let me go to Rachel. Hi, Rachel. Good morning.
I was calling about the period topic and how I first got mine and everything.
Okay. So what was your experience like?
So I was over at my aunt's house. Well, she's my mom's best friend. Always called her my aunt. And we were playing hide and go seek or tag or one of those games.
Some childhood game.
Went to the bathroom.
Stratego.
Saw that. It happened. Didn't realize it happened. Went back to playing tag. Came back in a little bit later and realized that's what it was. So I told my aunt. She called my mom, who only lived a couple blocks away. She came over, and they're crying in the kitchen. And they're like, oh, my God, she's a woman now and everything like that. So I was mortified. So I'm probably 11 or 12 years old.
Yeah, I think if you see your mom and your aunt crying, even if they're crying for joy, if it's a rite of passage or whatever, it's still going to be alarming, especially since you're bleeding, they're crying, and you have to cut your game of tag short.
Yeah, and they're like, it's no big deal, but they're crying, and I'm like, are you sure?
They seem to be upset. Yeah, no, that'd be hard. That'd be hard to deal with.
Isn't it weird though, at 11 years old, to be referred to as a woman at that point? You know what I mean?
I was referred to as a woman at 11.
Look at that little guy.
There was that guy who used to film us.
Yeah, right.
Now your name is Velma. Now dance for me, you little monkey.
No, but I mean, you're entering biologically into womanhood, but to be 11 years old and be referred to, you are now a woman. I'm a kid.
Do you consider yourself a man at the point
when
of
I got
puberty?
My pube? No.
Yeah, no. Look at me. Look, mother, I'll be making the decisions in the house now.
Right, exactly.
I have hair on my dong.
Right.
I was out there playing tag, and I'm like, well, now I'm a woman? I was just a kid
five seconds ago. Yeah.
Yeah, it's strange.
Yeah, but at that point, you could technically get pregnant and have a child. So that's why they consider it, you know, you being a woman. However, yes, you are still a child.
Yeah.
You just have your period.
Yeah. I'm going to go next to Lynn on the phone. Hi, Lynn. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey.
When I was 13 in middle school, I got my period. So I went to the school nurse because obviously my pants and panties were a mess. So
yeah.
The room was a common place where all the kids that were sick, and then there was a bathroom off of it. The school nurse's desk was right there. So she gets on the phone with my mom while I'm in the bathroom with all the boys sitting there that were sick.
Oh, man.
Says, could you please bring your daughter a change of clothes because she just got her period. The freaking drain, because now, like, all the boys, when I came out, knew, like, I had my period.
Why would she do that?
How old were you? What grade, Lynn, what grade was this in?
It was, like, when I was in, like, eighth grade. Oh. I was, like, mortified.
Of course.
Oh, man. The only thing saving was when I came home, it must have been near Valentine's Day. My mom come up to my room with this little heart candle that said, I love you, on it. And she sat down on the bed next to me and she said, here, I've been saving this for you. And now that you're a woman, and had the little talk with me.
That's sweet, right? That's a sweet memory attached to something that was rather embarrassing.
Yeah.
I wonder, at a certain age, Kathy, maybe you can answer this. Do you start arming a young lady
to carry with them? You know what? I didn't. No, it was kind of, no, I didn't. So
yeah.
I don't know. I guess some people, if you are aware that it's coming soon, you know, or you think it's going to happen, it might be a good idea. But like, nah, that wasn't something that
next year, Hello Kitty thermos.
How would you know? I mean, just age?
Yeah, age maybe. And you wouldn't, because like I said, all of my friends were getting it and I was like 2 years after them. So I would have been carrying around a pad for 2 years.
Can you have some people will have the chicken pox party. Can you have a menstrual party? And
oh my God, I forgot about the chicken pox party.
Right.
Oh yeah.
That's another party where you try to get your kids sick with chicken pox.
Which is stupid.
To get it out of the way.
You don't want to do that. Yeah. The doctors recommend you not do that.
So I should not attend the gonorrhea party we're having in our neighborhood?
That's totally up to you.
Yeah.
Menstrual party, you'd be like a bunch of cats attacking each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, this is kind of sweet, I guess. I got a text from a gal that says, I unfortunately got mine at a field hockey practice in high school, but my loving sister pushed me into the mud, faking to fight me so I wouldn't be embarrassed.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So she got mud all over.
Is that not cool?
That's really cool. Man.
I wish I had a sister who pushed me in the mud.
Yeah. Right. So people would know you had your period.
What? Did you have to spread barbecue sauce in her eyes?
You got to sell it, man.
You got to sell
it.
Yes. Did you have to back your car over? I was trying to make a point.
What is this? This says, my mother wouldn't let us shave our legs until we got our period.
Wow.
My sister was so excited to shave her legs that she ripped a 3-inch long piece of the skin off her leg in the process. Unfortunately, that was a huge indication to all of her friends that she had just gotten her period. So they all let the entire class know. Bucks Cove for life. That's what it says.
That's how they do it in Bucks Cove.
Yeah. Well, listen, these are realities that I'm going to be facing soon. Someday I'll have my period. No, my daughter's getting older. Casey, you've got a couple that you're going to have to.
Yes. You'll be a woman soon.
Yeah, it's not something I've really thought about. I just figured my wife will handle all
she
that.
She will. Yeah, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, Rochelle will be cool about it, too.
Yeah, I think also, but you have an understanding of how it's going to impact her. And I think the notion of making it, of trying to understand that and make it a more of a rite of passage and a pleasant experience shocking the hell out of them.
Yeah, exactly. And what I hope doesn't happen is that she doesn't have the same issues that Rochelle has with that. which is very painful.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. She has a rough go at it every time, and it sucks, man.
Awful.
My wife.
It is terrible.
She's got, debilitating.
Really?
Yeah, it's really bad. She's gone to the doctor several times to try to figure something out.
Yeah, wow. I get
her
the same
Mike
way.
Are working on it. What's that?
I get the same way. And, yeah. And I always have my entire life. It let up for a little while, maybe, I want to say, in my 30s, but then... Fortunately, it all came back. Yay.
Yay.
Wow. Is it like endometriosis or something?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't go to the doctor. But anyway.
You know, needles.
No.
Yeah.
Needles. I don't like that.
But the
my
mood
witch
swing,
doctor told me to swing a dead rooster over my head.
The mood swing situation is the worst of it all.
Oh, so, but you're always so pleasant. Yeah.
No, trust me. It is the worst ever.
Okay.
Do you feel it getting away from you?
Yes. Yes.
And there's nothing
absolutely
hormonally, but you're fighting what that's got to be very frustrating.
I've said this before to you guys. Something will happen and I'm like, I just get so angry and then I'm like, oh, right. Like it kicks in. I'm like,
okay,
that's why. But it doesn't help. You just know.
Hormonal imbalance.
You just know why you're a bitch.
Same thing with me. Like once a month, my pubes grow in extra thick and once a week and I know I'm going to be good. Don't want to deal with me.
No. Let me go to Morgan. Hi, Morgan. Good morning.
Good morning, Gadzooks.
What's up, Morgan?
I have a story I wanted to share. I am one of three girls, and when we each got our period at different stages, my mom took us out for a special woman dinner.
Ah.
Her and her girlfriend, Sue, used to go out for drinks and fried ice cream. That was their girls' night. So she sort of gave us our own first girls' night. And we, of course, had virgin daiquiris.
Okay. You said drinks. I'm like,
right. Yeah, we had alcohol. Yeah. Went to Chippendales and then smoked some meth.
Morgan, where are you in line with your sisters? You middle, youngest, oldest? What?
Oldest.
You're the oldest. You had to go through this first.
Yeah, I sort of paved the way.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess that's... But you're able to then usher the others through because you've gone through the experience.
Well, that leads into a whole other line of stories, but yes.
Yeah, but well, that's cool.
She did rings for us. They're more of queen crown rings instead of princess tiara rings. Oh. And she said, made it very, this is important. This is special. And you're not a princess anymore. You're a queen.
Ah.
And now she got them bigger. So we had ring sizers on, the plastic jelly underneath of it. And now we wear them when we have our...
Oh, gosh. Oh,
do you?
My dad gave me a little tiara. I remember when I my first pube.
Wow.
And, he said, you're a queen.
Yeah, you're a queen now.
Hey, Morgan.
If you know what's good for you.
Morgan, do you have kids?
I actually am expecting, and I plan on doing the ring, princess or queen ring with my daughters.
That's what I was curious if you were going to carry on that tradition.
That's taking a traumatizing thing and making it more pleasant. That's right. Very cool.
Thanks, Maury. Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. I think
because remember, just watch Carrie and see how bad it can go.
It can go bad. But I didn't know they were starting to have period parties. Apparently, that is the case. So I'm sure there are many traditions out there involved with that rite of passage, if you will.
Do you think this is something that was started by the DJs to get extra work?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
You mean the club DJs?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Darude's birthday today, by the way.
Is
we
it
missed
really?
It.
Yes. Darude Sandstorm?
Yes.
Well, then we have to play that.
Yeah, hang absolutely. On a second.
Yeah. It's a classic.
There you go. All the young ladies on the dance floor are having their periods.
All right, we got to take a break, friends. Thank you for your calls.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Hey, what's up? It's Preston. Listen, I'd like to thank Jack Frost Mountain for sponsoring today's podcast. Jack Frost and Big Boulder ski areas are officially open for the season. And WMMR's Day Up on the Slopes with Pierre Jackson is January 4th. Tickets are available now at WMMR.com while supplies last. JFBB, where the snow comes first.
If you love paying for shipping, you're going to hate Steven Singer. Free shipping both ways, making return and exchanges easy. Visit him online at IHateStevenSinger.com or at the other corner of 8th and Walnut. Steven Singer Jewelers. One place, one price.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, I'd like you to make it a perfectly personal new year with our friends at Hannah Stone. Make it personal. Make it about you. You spent enough time over the holidays thinking about everybody else. Let's think about you now. There's over 50 locations of Hand and Stone Massage and Facial Spa in Delaware, South Jersey, Philadelphia, the Lehigh Valley, and the spa services start at just $59.95. Take a look at what I'm talking about. Hand and Stone Massage and Facial Spa. Go to handandstone.com today.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
We welcome back our friend David Koechner. Yay! And we also would like to welcome Rob Mayer to our
thank you.
Gentlemen.
We were told that Kathy would be here. Very upsetting.
So I still think she is. So, yeah. You know.
You contain the delusion. Preston is.
We're so. Fair enough. Kind of hogs the show. Yeah.
I'm a bigger fan of you guys than she is.
Oh, I like you, Marie.
All right. Classic Marissa.
So, David, back in Philadelphia, you've been here a few times.
Yes. Yeah.
And
it's always dangerous here.
Is it dangerous to you particularly?
The station.
How so?
Last time it was the BB gun.
That's right. You're here for crack shot.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, now there's a construction all over the place. You could die at any second from a head wound from falling.
There you go.
At any second.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely.
We're all wearing our hard hats, right?
Yeah. Now. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's good to have you back. You know, we also feel. Because of the Goldbergs, you're an adopted Philadelphian anyway.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask you about the spinoff series, which is it going to be named School, do you know?
I think so.
Are you any part of that?
I'm not sure. I know I'm doing a bunch of Goldbergs this fall.
Okay.
And there's talk of maybe me going to do that one, too, because the gal that plays my daughter is on
Lainey.
That one.
Yeah. Yes. And she's, so she's a continuing character.
But
you should be.
But they're 10 years apart.
Because
I think School's set in the 90s.
Yes.
And the other one's set in the 80s, so I don't know.
You can play 90s.
Okay, thank you.
it's for us here, you know, and now we've sort of, you know, obviously struck up a bit of a friendship, though never having met Adam in person, with Cullen and Brian Callen and Tim Meadows. Tim Meadows, I think we told you this, had no idea the series took place in Philadelphia.
Oh, my gosh.
He's here. We told him it was a revelation.
In our studio, and we told him, he's like, I didn't know it took place. It was around here.
He thought it was on Netflix.
Yeah.
He walked by Wawa, because there's one right near Helium, and then I think it all started to occur in his head, too.
Together. Yeah. So, that'd be great if that's the case. I mean...
But my character, Bill Lewis, is a Dallas fan.
Yes.
Which is a bone of contention.
But you're now friends. You've worked out your friendship. Yeah. You put those issues behind you. Some of the funniest episodes, we were playing clips of you, especially the exchange with you and Barry... And the father at the door when they're cacaing in your face.
Oh yeah,
and it was just great because obviously here with the Super Bowl victory, it was high on everybody's mind. Yeah.
That's funny.
Are you in fact a Dallas fan?
No, of course not.
Chiefs fan.
Okay.
Let me ask you, because obviously you hate probably like the Raiders and all the other teams in your division, but. Do you have a special disdain for Dallas as well?
I think most Americans do.
Yeah. You know, and though everyone tries to push this America's team nonsense on you. In fact, you even say it it's a line in the Goldberg.
Yeah.
The only reason I liked Dallas, if any reason growing up, was because of the cheerleaders. And that was it.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
That's fair.
See, I'm a Redskins fan, so I obviously hate the Cowboys. And no one really hates the Redskins now because we're so bad. It's hard to hate us. It's just like you feel sorry for us, basically.
It's a more paternal thing. You and we were that way. Listen. No one knew. Yep. Even the most adept prognosticator thought we were looking at a good year last year, but not a Super Bowl.
Nine and seven, maybe eight and eight.
9-7 at best. Because, you know, you listen to what the quote-unquote experts say on TV and radio, and everybody said, well, 9-7, 8-8.
Plus, then when Wentz went down, it was like, well, that's over.
That's over. Yeah.
It was a beautiful thing, though, for Foles to step in. And that was beautiful. And the Chiefs did beat the Eagles last year, but...
hey, you know, we were talking about the ESPY Awards. Have you ever been...
I've never been.
We think it's the most, maybe the most unnecessary award show.
Is it?
Which is saying something, because almost every award show is unnecessary.
With a menu of useless award shows, it literally, as Preston has pointed out, you've won the award by winning already.
Yeah.
You know?
I would think, though, David, is your performance as Champ Kind would warrant you being there.
That's why I asked.
You know? Just to add a little bit of awful to the show.
You should host the show next year.
Yeah, bring the awful.
Champ would be so awful. Champ would probably say something about you guys better be standing up for the national anthem or something awful. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Something awful in line with the current awful.
Yeah. So we never, it's a never no-brainer. Contacted. They never made an approach.
I did the NFL Awards honors a couple years ago as, what's his name? The commissioner.
Goodell?
Goodell's brother, Russell.
That's great. That's
had great. Long hair down to my shoulders. Came out and said something nasty about Goodell.
David, do you get asked or hired often to do characters? Like, do people say, I want, you know, I'll pay you however many dollars to come and do an event as champ or something like that?
No, I've never had that.
I wonder why.
Are you offering? What do you want to do?
Well, it's my
Rob, do you have any characters you do, Rob?
I think I have been offered that once, but I was not interested.
Because we've had comedians in who've done roles and they'll do corporate gigs or whatever.
Yes.
And so sometimes you'll show up at this corporate gig and be expected to be a comedian that corporation wants you to be at that particular show.
Yeah, that would be awful. That would be tough.
At this point in your career, Rob, you're a seasoned comedian yourself. I mean, but still, you're. I don't know.
I'll take worst gigs. You'll take worst gigs.
That's basically what I'm
you're
asking.
You're paying me, I'll do whatever you say.
Yeah. Have you ever done, because for a few years I did stand-up, and I was doing the most bizarre gig I ever did was for the parent company that made Aramis Cologne. And it was very weird. But have you done anything like that?
I did a nudist resort in West Virginia.
Yeah.
So just picture 60-year-old white people, fat and naked. And that's the audience. Yep. So I love them. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Did they come naked to the show?
Yeah. They.
It's the whole thing. They're living naked. You're there for.
The hardest part was, well, that's a weird word, but it's they have a buffet, and you're like, I can't eat around naked people. It's just, you're looking it down the buffet line, and I don't want that. And it's really hot in there because they're naked and you're not, so you're hot. So it's very uncomfortable.
It's weird, too, with anything like that, whether it be a nude beach or you would see nudies as a kid, it'd be the classic playing volleyball and all that stuff, but that those aren't the people that go to nudist colonies.
No, it's not sexual. It's not at all. Free. This is who they are. They're old school hippies or something. That's the whole vibe.
Yeah. And it's
it's West Virginia, so it just adds another element.
Right. Which I believe, and beautiful country, but and I think maybe you guys will verify, the dumbest place in the country by far.
I don't know. I've been to Florida.
Florida's our Germany, we call it, because the amount of stories Preston doesn't feature, 80% of the stories out of that feature are from Florida.
Yep. Yeah, we have a jingle called Florida Man. Anytime there's a story that leads with a Florida man, you know it's going to be a good one, and we have this jingle.
Florida Man, Florida Man.
It's just its own little.
I should have said that we're playing Florida at the end of August.
Back to Orlando. We were in Tampa earlier.
Yeah.
Tampa's not bad.
You two guys, you're touring right now. Does your relationship go way back?
Sexual
relationship. Purely sexual.
Had a nudist. We played nudist.
Met at a nudist colony.
He was naked, and I I want more
of
that.
He was buying the potatoes au gratin.
Yes.
We met 4 or 5 years ago in D.C., where that's your hometown.
Yeah, we did this club outside D.C. I just happened to work with him, and then we hit it off, and then we've probably done 10 weeks,
With stand-up, with comedians who are seasoned and travel around a lot, you have an opener that you sort of rely on.
You're like, you know what you're getting. You're going to
get sets the crowd right. Yes. Yeah.
The whole show's going to be great. You don't have to worry about digging out a hole. Plus, Rob doesn't have any kid stuff that he does.
Pardon me, sorry.
I don't want to have to tell whoever my opener might be, like, hey, do you have kid stuff? You can't do it.
Right.
Because I got 5 kids.
Oh, my God. Right. If someone eats 5? Up your material,
guess what I'm
doing. And I'm 0 kids. Right.
Yeah. Age range of your kids?
A-frames?
Age range.
No. I do a lot of A-frame jokes.
Thank you.
It's a big architecture, actually.
Yes. Very niche.
And then I finished with the geodesic dome.
Very niche.
It's my closer. Come on.
Our Buckminster Fuller is your... That's hilarious.
Charlie is 19. Margo is 16. Sergeant and Audrey are 12.
Sergeant is a great name.
Yeah, it is, right?
Yeah.
And then Eve is 7.
Okay.
Wow. I sat by on the way out here. I came to New York to do a thing for Misfits and Monsters, Bobcat Goldthwait's new
series.
Yeah, yeah.
Our video guy Nick was telling us about telling me about it. It sounds really cool. It's like a Twilight Zone-ish, yes. Black Mirror-ish sort of deal.
It's an anthology series.
You play a werewolf politician.
I play a politician that turns into a well. It's an allegory story of the current. A clown that's in the White House. It's a guy, an evil guy, but he happens to be a werewolf.
All right, right.
And so,
and they're like, so do you have anything in your history?
Yeah. Well, I'm a werewolf. anything else? I ate a toddler once. Well, then I was a werewolf.
Yes.
And then people find out about him being a werewolf, and he still gets elected.
There you go.
Because then they got people going, I want a werewolf in the White House.
Right.
Goldthwait is a, not to go off on a tangent, because we wanted to talk about the kids as well and the original point. But he is a really solid director.
He's awesome.
He's been working the craft for a while.
He's fantastic.
Going back to, like, Shakes the Clown and stuff. We've had him in a couple times to promote his thing. He even did, like, a really minimal Blair Witch-ish kind of Bigfoot horror movie.
Yeah.
Which was really good.
Yeah, they love it.
Like, just sound.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's amazing to see. And he's also, we've been watching the Robin Williams documentary, which is phenomenal.
Is it? Okay.
And he is, they were the best of buds. So,
Bobcat, man, he's fantastic.
Who knew?
Yeah. He's great. I mean, his stand-up is still stellar. We happened to be, the week I was filming back last year in Atlanta for the series, there was a comedy show going on, or comedy festival happening in town. And I knew the organizers, and so they asked me to do something. So I asked Bobcat, I said, hey, do you want to go up and do 10 minutes tonight? We're both going to do that. And we thought we'd be part of the main show, which was at an auditorium. They had us in a tent in a parking lot.
The open mic tent.
The open mic tent.
Folding chairs and this makeshift stage that was about 5 feet tall. It was just ridiculous. And I went up and had a good set, and then Bobcat goes up, and he's a master.
Yeah.
He's a master. It was just fun to watch someone who's like, wow, that shows you just how long he's been doing it, how good he is. It was just beautiful.
Who were you, between you both, when we talk about the Robin Williams special and the documentary, who inspired you? Who got you going in your early days of comedy? Because I think everyone has, you know, one or two people that just, this is...
Sure,
this
I loved Sam Kinison. That was my first true comedian love.
Kinison was unbelievable. And I've told these guys, it's a story. It's the Huntington Yacht Club. I'm from New York, and Kinison, you talk about bombing. He was playing... Someone inappropriately booked him into this very hoity-toity, Grey Poupon sort of yacht club.
Whoops.
And so he's up on stage, and he's just barrel-assing through the show. And at the end, he ladies and gentlemen, I just want to let you know, I wipe my ass with a list of your sacred dead.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh. But Kinison for you as well? Or who?
I was more of a sketch and improv background. So for me coming up, it's Abbott and Costello, the Marx Brothers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Monty Python. The
Were
early
you Laurel and Hardy?
Life.
Pardon? Laurel and Hardy fan as well?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Not as much. Like, Abbott and Costello was really my thing, because I'd watch it with my dad on Saturday afternoons.
Yeah.
Chick. The Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yes.
Oh, has God. Some of the...
Come on.
Some of the funny... And I think they're underappreciated.
Agreed.
Because people think they're too... But there's an exchange with the Wolfman, you know, Larry Talbot, when he's just talking about... you have a straight man with Bud Abbott, unparalleled,
right.
and they're joking back and forth, and suddenly he just grabs him and he goes, is he serious? And Bud Abbott goes, he's gonna murder you, and just a throw off line is hilarious.
Well, my son, he just turned 11, so when he was 10, I think I said something like, who's on first now? What's on, you know? And he didn't know what I was talking about, so I showed it to him. And it holds up. It was making a 10-year-old laugh. And
wow.
That's how timeless, you know, those guys are.
That's perfect. Yeah.
I loved it. I loved it. And I made the mistake of showing my son Charlie, who's 19 now, I showed him Monty Python and the Holy Grail at age 10, and he didn't get it.
Yeah.
Because that's my favorite comedy movie.
He just, Preston just did with his, with,
who'd you show? Yeah, my son who's 16 now, and he loved it. So you may have, you may have,
you have to wait a bit.
A little bit.
Yeah. And, because there is nuance to it that won't click.
Oh, he loves it.
So do you, because he comes in, Preston will come in and is like, I showed it and they loved it or whatever. They're listening to Queen or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Are you cautious about indoctrinating or attempting to force fandom on your kids?
You mean in terms of
I want you to love. I want you to love this, but I don't want to force it too much on you for fear you'll hate it.
They did not like Apocalypse Now.
Really?
That's one of my favorites.
But you know what? If you look at those movies and movies that I love, like, you know, the pacing is so atypical of pacing in movies today.
It's patient.
Long single takes that are just... And unless you've had a bit of experience with that, you're going to hate it.
Yeah. Although my son Charlie's now decided to be an actor out of nowhere. And
really?
So, yeah. Last year he's going to go to college, and a week before I was going to write the first check, he goes, yeah, Dad, and he's acting like he's playing basketball in the house. He's got a great shock of hair. Good-looking kid. 6'4". He goes, I think of being an actor, a successful actor. I'm like, okay, well, that's the good kind to be. But I assume it's kind of like a firefighter thing. Like, well, I'll just go do what Dad does.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, I've been very fortunate. I've always worked. There's never been a time in the house where it's like, oh, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
So he thinks... Well, I'm better looking than that guy. So this has got to be easy.
Yeah, I'm hot. So, you know, obviously people want to put me on camera.
And he's not entirely off base when it comes to that, but there's some other stuff involved, too.
Well, but you never know. It's one of those things, like, if you've got that confidence and you assume it's going to happen, it can.
It can,
And he is good looking. He's got James Dean hair. Well,
who's that guy? Craig Ferguson, right? Yes. He lived in the United States for a week before he got his first gig?
Is that right?
Something along those lines. Because, listen, if
the
you
Drew Carey show?
You got it, you got it. And it's as simple as that. I want to talk to you about a movie that maybe a lot of people don't know about. Obviously, everybody knows about Anchorman, but... and this might be available on Hulu, Netflix, or whatever, but Cheap Thrills.
Thank you.
What a fun movie. And
that's
your character is awesome. But Ethan Embry's in it. You're in it.
Pat Healy.
Pat Healy is in it as well. And it's just, I mean, it could be a stage show. I mean,
I thought so, too. It plays like a play.
Well, I'm not familiar, and I'm pretty much...
It's great. It's on Netflix. Yeah. I looked the other day.
Is it? Okay.
Because we were looking for movies to watch, and it's like, no, you can't watch this movie, kids.
It says here it came out in 2013.
Yeah. Okay.
It's really good. It's rated R. It's not a comedy.
No.
It's kind of, it's a dark thriller with some comedic... elements. I never thought there'd be a laugh in it. I watched it with audiences, you know, when it first came out, and there was tons of laughs. I couldn't believe it.
So Pat Healy and Ethan Embry play these two guys who I believe went to high school together and just so happened upon each other at a bar one night. And, you know, they're both kind of in a point in their lives where, man, they could really use some money. And then they meet your character who just so happens to have a lot of money.
I did.
Yes.
And you have. Yes, I did see it. In fact, we had you on to talk about it.
Well, it's probably you're doing stand-up and maybe promoting that at the same time.
Yeah, it's sort of, it plays out. In fact, it is very stagey. It takes place basically in that house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's
you could
very
easily
good.
Do it as a play.
And you were benignly menacing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one point in the movie, and I just keep thinking about it. I'm looking at you. There's a point in the movie where these guys are they going to do it or are they not going to do it? And the camera cuts to you and you're just kind of like nodding like,
let it happen.
Did you dig that? Is there a fear when you're known for one thing or one type of thing primarily of going there?
No, to me, I was like happy that it was a transitional type thing. And, you know, it was a smaller movie. So I knew it wasn't going to be a big... You know, like, oh, look out, look who's trying to do something different.
he's got his jug band.
But it does work.
It's fun.
And
it's
I am good.
I am good. You know, Adam McKay is doing, look at the stuff he's doing now.
He won an Oscar.
Yes.
He's a buddy from Philadelphia.
Yes.
I've done improv with McKay since 1990.
Right.
We're doing the crazy make-em-ups. The off-the-cuffy Mad Libs, you know. Right. I've been doing long-form improv. And my buddy wins an Oscar.
It's very cool.
I love it. Yeah. But he's one of those. I don't know if you've had him on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Many times.
He's a friend of the show. He's a great guy.
The funniest guy I've ever met is McKay.
And he's quirky, though. He has, and he knows he does. He has sort of a quirky way about him. But the stuff is great. And with the right people, such as yourself, It's gold.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's amazing. So, you know, we do Anchorman, and then for the second one, he had a monitor up near the set, and he'd be, a PA system.
Yeah, yeah.
And he'd have a microphone, and so he would just throw out new lines. Because we'd have your stuff, and then we'd do the scene, and then he'd say this, because he'd have a mic back by the monitor. And then I'd come in the morning with my alts,
right, new lines.
And he would immediately, he'd laugh at all of them, and then he'd suggest something different that was 20 times better. And you're just like,
There's a great scene, I was telling these guys about it, where you, it's in the second one, where you and Will Ferrell are hugging over a counter. And it goes on and on. I watch the it's a rarity. Has it ever been done where you took the outtakes of one movie and made a whole new movie, which he did, but you still have the alternate takes on those two films are pure enjoyment. Can you watch them and laugh?
I haven't seen it.
Really?
No.
The film or the outtakes?
The outtakes.
Okay.
That's terrible to say, but my kids have. Have you seen the musical?
No,
There's a musical in the second one. It was never put in it, but I thought it might be on that longer one.
No, any of the blooper stuff I've seen, I haven't.
We get to New York and we don't know what it's like what's going on. It's this song called "It's a Whole New World." We can't get our minds around all these different people.
It is in the second one.
But it's on an alternate thing.
Okay.
And in the middle of that musical, we stop and we meet a gay person, and then we really can't get our minds around this. We're like, so, do you live in a coffin? He's like, no, that's a vampire. Can you go out during the day? He's like, no. Again, that's a vampire. And then Champ whispers, do you tell people? Well, and then we break into a song called "If I Were Gay for a Day."
Oh, my God.
If I were gay for a day, there's nothing I wouldn't say. That's the gay way. And that's in the middle of this musical. Then it goes into that. Then it goes back into the big musical production with dancing and all that stuff. And I thought, it is.
We're
looking at clips of it right now.
I have not seen this.
The thing I love about it is I knew that there was going to be some homophobes singing to themselves "If I Were Gay for a Day" and not know it. That's the part.
Because it's so catchy.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, in the first one, David, the Skyrockets in Flight comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's funny for so many reasons, but it's also the harmonies that you guys hit are spot on.
Yeah.
So I've watched it and laughed a million times, and I've also watched it and be like, man, these guys really nail it.
Yeah, and you know, we only did three takes.
Really?
Yeah. So it was kind of it wasn't in the script, and McKay said, hey, do you guys think is there a song you'd want to do? And I'm pretty sure it was Rudd's idea. How about Afternoon Delight? Yeah. So in that first show, we had what they call triple bangers, which means there's three rooms in a trailer as opposed to your own trailer. And so me, Steve, and Paul were in that same trailer. And so then we'd go and Will would come in and we just practiced a couple times. And then that was it.
I just saw Paul Rudd on Colbert. He's promoting Ant-Man. And he was talking about a charity event that you're a part of because you guys are both from Kansas City.
Well, I'm from near there. My wife's from KC, but yeah.
Okay. And it was to benefit a hospital?
Children's Mercy Hospital.
That's awesome.
We raised $2.2 million this year.
That's what grabbed my attention. Yeah, that is a staggering amount of
money.
It was
nice. Yeah. And so it's Rudd, myself, Riggle, Stone Street, and Sudeikis. All from Kansas City or the Kansas City area. And then we bring a bunch of our celebrity buddies in from all over the, Kansas, from New York and California.
And what's the event? What do you, is it stand-up?
Oh, what we do is we do, we do a softball game. We go visit the kids at Children's Mercy. And then we do a softball game at Kauffman Stadium, which is Royals Park. And people get upset if they call it Royals Park, but it's Kauffman Stadium. And on the field. And then we sit and watch that in the dugouts. We get all these sponsors that pay a lot of money to go hang out. And we so hang out with them for a little bit. The next day, we go visit the kids again. Then we have a big bowling event where people can pay to bowl with celebrities. So it's another level of fundraising. And then we have a big show auction that night.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
Were you invited to that, Rob, or no?
No, I was actually uninvited.
The kids don't want you.
There's just no kid. They act. The kids specifically requested you not show up.
And for the kids, I didn't show up.
Anything. That's the kind of caring person you are.
I went to Florida with Marissa.
Yes.
Kept calling her Kathy. It was weird.
I didn't mind, though, awkwardly.
Can get weird. David, film-wise, anything else coming up in the near future?
Let's see. There's always... right now, I think there's a thing called Bernard and Huey available somewhere on Video On Demand. It's an old... It's kind of the... It's Carnal Knowledge 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was a fan of Carnal Knowledge 1. Yeah.
This one is... But it's a bit dated, I'll be honest with you.
Is it?
It's written in 89 or something like that.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of misogyny in it. That just goes, but that's the way Jules Pfeiffer wrote it at that time. He was doing these characters for Playboy, and these were these cartoons, and then he made it into a screenplay.
It gets weird because also you have to judge things in the time that they come from. You know, like you look at some of the John Hughes stuff, judge it from the time. It's unfair to hold it up to a light now and say, well, no. So if people take it in context, but I remember what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And that's what it is, and then you understand that.
Right.
So but it's a weird thing,
It's so I don't know. There's a bunch of independents I did last year. I don't know if they're coming out. Departures, this, that. I can't. Oh, you know what? Let me say this. Captain Underpants.
Oh, there you go.
So it was a cartoon on Netflix. So that's out.
Very cool.
And Misfits and Monsters.
And you're Mr. Meaner in Captain Underpants?
Yes, so that's fun for me, for the kids.
That's cool.
My youngest daughter's excited about that. So.
That's awesome. We'd love that you come by here, man. Thank you.
You guys
so much.
Are always a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Great to meet you, man.
Yeah.
Pleasure. We'll see you next time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. David Koechner and Rob Meyer.
We're going to take a break.
I could have called you Kathy.
My middle name.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Piece of video that was circulating over the weekend that is just so unbelievably cringeworthy. Oh, my God. It's from Let's Make a Deal.
Yes.
The Wayne Brady-hosted show.
Which I have to admit, I have not seen one second of.
Neither have I.
I always love Let's Make a Deal, but it's on during the day.
And I hate Wayne Brady.
And we hate Wayne Brady. He's another part of that equation.
There's
the
that,
worst
too.
Interviews ever on our show. He was just a jerk. But anyhow... he had these two people on. It was a girl named Jessie, a guy named Steve, and they're going to be, you know, participating in one of the contests.
Yeah.
And Wayne asks them how long they've been together. How long has this thing been going on? And I'm not going to play it. I just wanted to tell you it was this guy gets cast into the friend zone on national television.
Oh, man.
And it is, I don't think the audio will do it justice because you got to see the look on this guy's face. He's just... He's just destroyed.
You haven't seen it, Kathy?
No,
all right, so what the deal, the mechanism for Let's Make a Deal, by the way, is that the host goes up into the audience, and they're all dressed in costumes to get noticed. So they're wearing, the couple is Steve and I think Jesse.
Yeah.
And they're in their quote-unquote prom outfits.
Uh-huh.
And
they had some kind of prom
event
that was going on with the show.
Right, and she's all... she's all energetic and giggly where it becomes quickly apparent that he's like, no, don't do this.
Yeah.
Don't take me down this path don't do it here.
Uh-huh.
Oh boy.
So let me play this audio for you. We'll see how this translates just on an audio sense. Here we go.
That's awesome. Now, how long have you guys been together?
About 6 months.
That's it. It's new. Oh, it's newish.
We're friends. We're just friends.
Can we talk about this? Not in front of everyone.
look at his
it's
face.
It's complicated.
I'm single, guys. I'm single.
Oh, my
what?
God.
Oh, no. We're really good friends.
Oh.
Oh, that's terrible.
Jeez. And Wayne is just, like, looking around like,
oh, my God.
So we have this.
And then he takes it off in another direction. All right.
Oh, man.
Oh, that hurts. The friend zone thing, especially if they've... Now, what I can't tell is whether these guys have been, you know, maybe have a non-committal relationship where they're flirting, having some fun, a little bit of, you know, this and that, and then she's not ready to take it seriously, or if nothing has happened yet and he's just hoping that it happens.
I hear you. I think what would belie the actual
relationship status is, he says, about 6 months.
Yeah.
When Wayne Brady asked how long you been together.
Yeah.
He would, if he, it was anything else in his mind, he'd say, oh, we're just friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just friends. We're just buddies.
Well, she's an a-hole.
You know, and then while he's clearly injured, you know, from that remark, she starts soliciting for guys to let her know,
yeah,
I'm single.
In fact,
let's bang on him.
Oh, my God.
So, Preston, there's somebody on Twitter I thought is pretty accurate. A woman writes, the worst things are going to happen to you. 3, going to prison. 2, straight up dying. 1, this.
Yeah. That's terrible.
Listen, now, they're adults, and it's kind of a different story when you become an adult. But I remember in the days of high school being friend-zoned, and it was just crushing. It was just horrible. I took it so badly, and it just I'm sure I had some type of depression from it, because there were a girl that I would start to develop a communique with, a relationship.
Yeah.
I'm smitten with this person. It starts to happen. We're communicating, and then you get the friend thing. And
how long a process are we talking?
I don't remember, because it happened so many times.
Yeah.
Steve, and I couldn't tell you specifics, but then it would be like, I hate you.
Yeah, because I don't want to be your friend.
Well, because you know what I mean?
I never got to, not a real hatred. I know what you're saying.
You
become resentful, maybe more than hatred.
But it hurts so bad.
But what happens is that you start to do things normally out of, like, you change the way you are a little bit. You'll do anything to curry favor with this person.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and then there's a whole bunch of mini awkward moments along the way. Because if you are palling around with this girl, you're out at fun, and you're often asked, are you guys together? And then it's an open sore that never closes.
Ugh, right.
And until you make an ultimate resolution now, to where you stand.
This guy, I don't necessarily know exactly what their deal was, because he says 6 months. So that leads me to believe that they're getting it on. They're doing something.
In his mind, they are.
Yeah.
Because you're not friends.
She's like, no, we're good friends.
You're not friends with somebody for 6 months without doing that. And then when somebody asks you how long has this been going on,
you can be getting it on and still be in the friend zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Because that's the point I'm getting at is I was put there, and I think it's worse when you've actually been active.
You've partaken of the fruit.
Yes. And then you get put in a friend zone
after.
Like, that is worse than just being ultimately put in the friend zone to begin with.
Really?
Yes.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
I don't know about
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that,
because then you're not going to think you're...
So I don't have that, but I got that.
Yeah, yeah. At least we had that.
Yeah.
We've had a few awkward moments here where, like, a guy and a girl will visit the studio, and afterwards Preston will say, oh, how long have you guys been together? Or, you know, and they're like, oh, well, we're kind of friends.
Or they're brother and sister sometimes.
That happened too.
That's happened on many occasions.
Oh, sorry.
But listen, I want to speak to, going back to the younger thing, because once I got into my, 20s and so forth, the heartache wasn't quite as hard. It wasn't as difficult, or you know, being interested in someone and finding out it wasn't reciprocal wasn't quite as hard as I think it was when I was a teenager. But I just want to speak directly to those of you who are going through this, who have gone through this. It happens. It happens to a whole lot of people, and eventually you're going to be okay. But I took it so hard, man. It was just really, really difficult.
I had the situation where for a while, listen, I was... I've always had a lot of female friends. That's always been my deal. Like, friends. So that would often lead to friend zone status in some cases. And then I was casting friends into the friend zone who wanted more relationship-wise. I think, though, the more classic scenario is the guy being on the receiving end of the friend zone. And that's just the nature of the beast.
I can still name the friends from middle school to high school that I thought I had a shot at, and they never considered me at all a romantic option, and I was always in the friend zone. But I asked all 3 of those girls out and got shot down by all of them, and their names will be forever burned in my memory.
Yeah, it sucks. Let me go to
Mindy
some calls.
Gallo.
I'm gonna go to Joe.
Nick, it's Mindy. We can patch it up.
I'm gonna go to Joe. Hey, Joe, how you doing, brother?
Good morning. How are you, gentlemen? It's late today.
Good. Doing very well. What's your story, buddy?
I was actually in the friend zone and almost, I was on the borderline of brother zone, which is even harder to escape.
Oh, you're like a brother to me. Ah, oh, I've heard that.
I'm one of very few that can say I escaped it, and my wife and I have now been married for just over 2 years. And
oh, wow.
All right, instruct those out there how you went about converting friendship, a friend zone, to brother zone to marriage. How did you work that deal?
She did it. I'm not even going to bullcrap it. I was out running tractor trailers over the road. I was in Salt Lake City, Utah. I'm on the phone with her for about 3 hours, and she's like, I realized something. I'm like, what? She turns around and says, I may like this guy I'm talking to, but I'm in love with you. I couldn't say anything, but in my head, I was doing flips and losing my mind.
Wow. So she says to you, you're out salting the road, or you're doing your job, you're talking on the phone, and she just out of the blue says, she loves you. Had you had any indication whatsoever that her feelings had gotten that strong for you?
None at all. Before that, I was just like, oh, yeah, we're really good friends, and I'm just like, shoot me. Every time I heard, yeah, you're just a good friend, I love you like a friend, it's like, just shoot me.
Yeah.
And then that bombshell just dropped on me, and I just, for about 2 minutes, I'm like, what?
Well, yeah, I see.
Good for you, man.
Everyone looks, any guy in the friend zone looks for advice to get out of the friend zone because it is a tough, tough deal to leverage. Because ultimately, either she likes you or she doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to go to Steve next. Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Hey, is this Kenny Big Rig Rodder?
Yeah, that's right. You got him here. What's up, Steve?
Well, when I was a senior in high school, I asked this girl out to prom, and I was absolutely head over heels enamored with her. She was super talented, super beautiful, and I was, like, prepared to tell her how I felt when we were at the prom. But then at the end of our slow dance, she said something. She said, I think she said, you're a really good friend. Mm. And I kind of lost it there for a second.
Yep.
But what really sealed the deal was she left after the slow dance to go sit at the table that her boyfriend was sitting at, who was also at the same prom.
A boyfriend. She had a boyfriend. Did you know
she had
this?
A boyfriend. I did not know this, and I found it out the night of the prom.
Oh.
Nick found his prom date under another guy.
Yeah, it could have been worse.
Could have been worse. That's all you got.
People love that story.
Yeah. Yeah. When you have to move a guy so that you can ask your girl where your car keys are.
Thanks, Steve. By the way, and Steve points out there's a strategic way that some women will do it as opposed to being straight up and saying, listen, I just like you as a friend.
Yes.
That's pretty clear. That's exactly, I'm telling you this. I want you to know that. A sneaky way of doing it is, like he said, you're such a good friend. I just like you as a friend. You're such a good friend.
Right, which hurts more.
And to that point, guys in the room, consensus, so that ladies can hear this, which way would you rather be informed?
Directly
as well.
Yeah, probably.
Because it will. I'd rather, because it just shuts it down, and it's not like Dumb and Dumber. So you're saying there's a chance,
right? Where you're an idiot enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you just might actually think that.
But okay, so but this is if there was. That she was okay or into it for a little while, and now she's got to tell you no.
No, a girl can tell.
What I'm saying is I'm not supposed to tell every single guy friend that I'm not interested.
No, when you know that the guy, your receptors are up and you're sensing that he's looking for it more or wants more, I think most guys would appreciate you saying, listen, I think you're great. I want to be friends, but I'm not.
I don't find that to be the female's responsibility. If she's not putting up, if she's not giving any advances, or she's solely acting as a friend, why should she have to tell you?
Yeah, she does not have to. But if she wants to let the guy know, the onus is not on her to do it. But if she's going to do it in a way that I think is less duplicitous.
Well, I know what Kathy's saying, though. So yeah, the guy has not been obvious about signs, and you legitimately think this is a platonic, nice friendship, and you say it, and secretly inside the guy really
wants something else,
and he hears that, and it's just deflating. It hurts.
Let me ask you.
And there's no malice. There's no intention. You know, you just legitimately think that, hey, we're good friends.
How many times in your life were you unaware that a guy wanted more, to be more than just friends?
Were you ever shocked to learn that a guy you were hanging around with wanted more than just friendship? Like, out of the blue, sucker punch, like, oh, my God. Or did you always sort of have an idea?
God, I don't even remember. I mean, I had a lot of guy friends. I don't know. I don't know that I can answer that. I don't remember.
Yeah. We'll call your lawyer.
I'm going to go to Jordan. Jordan, good morning.
I think that says it all on this Monday.
Yeah.
It's Mondays.
Yeah.
So I was like kind of going on a date with this girl for like a month. We were going out. Spent a lot of money.
That's great.
And, she told me one night, she's like, hey, I want to meet your daughter. And I was like, okay. She's like, can I be called Aunt Jamie? And I was just like,
No.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, if you don't mind me banging her aunt.
Yeah.
And when you heard that, were you destroyed? Did you still try to work at it, or was that it? It was done. All right.
And then have you remained friends, though?
Yeah, we're still friends. I don't really go out with her, though.
Okay. Well, she's very expensive.
Interesting. All right. Thanks, man. Yeah, because, listen, if you can take that rejection... Even though it may not be direct on her part, she may not know that she's killing you by doing this. But if you can take that rejection and still remain friends, it's a cool thing, you know. But you're always going to want to, at some point deep inside you,
I've managed to keep
be with
that
person, you know,
or deep inside her.
No, yeah, or deep inside her. Yeah. Let me go to. I have Mike on the line. Hey, Mike. Good morning.
Hey guys, Gadzooks.
Gadzooks, what's up, buddy?
So I would, this is many, many years ago, I was dating this girl. I shouldn't say dating, but we were off and on for a couple months, and out of nowhere, she just stopped, and she started dating another guy, so it was like, I kind of took it to hint. But the only good part is, like, I got friend zoned, but we still fooled around, like, every once in a while after that, and it's, you know, I was okay with it, and, like, now we're still really good friends, but...
Well, that's friends with benefits.
That's another thing, that's a whole other category, because I think... If a girl wants to you know that you're in the friend zone by having sex with another guy and going out with another guy, I think that's pretty overt.
Yeah.
You know?
See, that's how I was sort of friend zoned, because I was, to her, a friend with benefits.
Okay.
But I wanted to marry her.
You wanted to marry her.
You were in love.
No, I was in love. I was 18 years old. And
that's got to be a little hard.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been friend zoned and the girl that you're friend zoned by is in a relationship with a guy who's just horrible? Like, there was a girl that I was friend zoned by where the guy she was seeing made Tony Manero look like Stephen Hawking.
And you know better.
Yeah.
And you know better, and you can help her.
Exactly.
But she can't see that.
She could not see it.
Yep.
She loved this dummy, and that was it.
Sometimes it doesn't make any sense. And I've known women who seem to be smart and have their head on straight and everything, mm-hmm. but they like idiot guys.
And this guy would mistreat her, Preston, all the time. And she would come to me to talk about his transgressions.
How old were you when this happened, Steve? Do you remember?
17, 18?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me go to Emily. Hi, Emily. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, what's up, Emily?
A couple months ago, I was on Tinder, and I met this guy. And for a couple months, like, we were just getting to know each other and whatever. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I met his friends. But around his friends, he would, like, tell them that this is my friend. Like, he didn't even put a label on our relationship, even though, like, sometimes he would say, like, we were more than just friends.
Yeah.
But then one day, we went out, and he was really drunk, and he mentioned a girl's name.
Yeah.
So then I looked her up, and I saw him, a girl, and a little boy, and then I found out that he was married.
Oh,
I kind of confirmed that I was definitely just friends with him, even though, like, we kind of did everything a couple would do, and I was really confused until I found out that he was married with, like, a three-year-old.
I don't think you're at that point in the friend zone. I think you're in the manipulated, cheated on side action zone.
Yeah.
And the guy's a scumbag for doing that.
Yeah, he didn't let you know. He wasn't straight up with that. So did you guys have sex? If you don't ask him, mind me asking so bluntly?
Can you give us his number so we can ask?
You did. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Dude was scamming you.
He was scamming you, and that's it's horrible that you were treated that way.
It sucks, Emily.
I mean, like, he told everybody, his friends, everyone. Like, he would even talk about me with his wife, but mention me as, like, a friend from school and stuff like that.
What?
And I messaged her, and I told her all about it, and I think they're getting a divorce.
Well, good. Good.
So. Yeah.
Well, now you guys can go out.
Yeah. Now he's free. He's free. He's free.
I don't want to ever hear about
him. No. Good. Stay away from guys like that.
Oh, Emily. That's messed up. Yeah.
I think any...
Friend-zoned.
Emily, or to any woman listening, if you're out there, I say you need to spend some time with the guy you're dating and his family and his wife and kids before you decide if he's the one.
Yeah.
Honestly, I wouldn't even have known because he had so much free time on his hands. He was like living a double life. I don't even know how you do that.
Always judge a guy by the way he treats his wife. And then you'll know if he's the one for you.
Yes. It's like how people treat servers at restaurants.
Exactly. Yeah.
How does he treat his wife and children?
How does he treat his wife and children? That's how you know.
Emily, I'm sorry that happened to you. Hope something better comes along, okay?
No, I don't feel bad at all. I mean, I feel bad for his wife and all because apparently he called me a homewrecker. So
you weren't. Yo, listen.
He did it.
That chapter is closed, and now you're on to better things.
Yes.
I mean, you would have thought he would have put that stuff on his Tinder profile. But
as they say, he's being duplicitous. You gotta let the guy.
I mean, it's like, at least use a fake name. Like, don't use your real name. Like, he mentioned a girl's name. I put the last name on, and it's like, oh, there we go. Right.
Do you know what he was doing, Emily, just to explain the process?
Yeah.
He was keeping things as maneuverable as possible, so in case there was a slip, he wouldn't get caught. Like, if he said, my name is Lord Esteban. And I'm, you know, and speaks with, and there's so many things that he could trip up on. Yeah. However, if he's mentioning your name in front of the wife
and friends,
it's to minimize slippage. You know?
Wow. All right. Thanks, Emily. Sucks. Appreciate it. I don't think that's quite friend zone. Talking about,
that's
but
that's different.
That's pretty messed up. We still need to do like a relationship, advice. A segment from time to time.
Oh, let's. We have two things we need to do.
We're good at
that. Need to chop off comb overs and.
Yes, we do.
That's right.
Yes, we're going to do.
We're going to do that
this summer. We're waiting for it to warm up a little bit.
That first one might actually help some relationships.
Right. Yes.
You know.
Stop getting with these. Get out of the friend zone and get into the auto zone.
Okay. Wait. Let me go to John. I want to hear this story. John, you're on the air. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, so what's your friend zone story?
Well, I met this girl earlier this year, and we hung out, hooked up and all that fun stuff for a couple months. And like about a month and a half ago, she officially kind of put me into the friend zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was cool with it because I actually kind of agree with you, Preston. Like, if you did kind of some extracurricular things, it kind of just softens the blow for me.
Yeah.
So I didn't really care, but... So she contacted me about a month later and said she just wanted to meet for a bite to eat, and I was cool with that. So we went and hung out, and then at the end of the meal, she asked if I would go with her to the store to pick up a pregnancy test for another guy. That she
Oh man!
Let me ask you: Are those pregnancy tests are they very heavy where you might need a man to help you pick it up?
Yeah. She's rubbing this in your face.
Yeah. This I'm getting the one that they just came out with. It's 300 pounds.
No, you know, she said she has, I guess, suffers from some sort of anxiety, and she just had an issue going by herself. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And
she didn't have any girlfriends she could call, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? You could even order it online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
kind of awkward.
It's very awkward.
I can understand. Yeah. Thanks, John. Appreciate it, man. Yeah, listen. The friend zone thing can be you have this sort of relationship going on, and then they drop it on you after you've already been together. Or then there's the kind that which I was always a victim of because I was too much of a pussy, to say anything to the girls that I was interested in, and so in a non assertive sort of way, I would insert myself into a relationship, communication, and then they would drop the bomb. You're such a good friend.
I know. Like
you. You're so nice.
However, if you are
inside,
a guy...
I'm just erupting.
You're
just
dying.
Oh, it's just killing me.
If you are a guy who can learn how to be friends, like when Harry met Sally, if you can have female friends, it's a wonderful thing.
It is.
You learn nuances. You learn things
that'll
open up your eyes. That'll make you a better person to date.
Most definitely.
And be in a relationship with a woman.
And I'm not opposed.
With women.
I'm not opposed to having female friends. I had legitimate friends. friends that were buddies.
Yes.
That were female. And I loved having those. And they, gentlemen, will open up the door of advice for you, and you should listen
straight,
to them.
Straight up advice.
You should listen to the women that you're friends with in your life to get advice about other girls.
Yeah, I was, I had been turned down so many times asking girls out that, like, it just got to a point where I'm like, I can't. I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah.
But we're just going to hang out and be friends, and then hopefully you'll like me.
Lou, what are you doing this weekend?
No, I know. Yeah.
And that's what happened, that, you know, the girl who eventually friend-zoned me, she's the one who kissed me.
Yeah.
She kissed me.
Suddenly, it becomes the forbidden fruit now.
Yes.
Now the power struggle has shifted.
And then she told, we were even having sex, she said, I would have sex with you. And I said, okay, let me go find a rubber.
Yeah. But only if you help me go buy a pregnancy test. Because I got to get this baby out first, but you're next.
All right. I want to hear from Alyssa because she's got a theory, which on the surface I don't quite understand. I need to hear about
it.
Hi, Alyssa. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi. What's up?
So I was in a relationship for seven years, and I had a friend who was a guy who made it clear to me that if anything ever happened in my relationship and took every opportunity to let me know, like, what a crappy guy I was in a relationship with, that he would always be there for me.
Uh-huh.
So my friends all knew about it, and we, like, developed this theory. It's called Next in Line Theory. And it's the guys that stay friends with you through those relationships, always there to wipe away your tears if there's a fight, because they're convinced that if anything happens, they're going to be next in line.
That is a fact. That is not theory. There are, and I think we've all done versions of that. However,
sure.
I've had many female friends that I was just solely a friend for and would do that anyway. So sometimes it's hard to delineate between the reason for being that way. But you're right. I think hope springs eternal for a lot of guys. And they figure, just be there because it's eventually going to come crashing to earth and they'll jump in. Nick, to the point about the dating or being in the friend zone with a girl who is involved with a bad guy, a dummy.
Yeah.
I would never berate this guy to her, the girl that I was in the friend zone with, because she knew it. She really knew it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it would only make me... I wasn't going to fix her problem.
No, but I would bitch to her friends about the moron that she was dating.
Yeah. Oh, he did that all the time. Yeah.
Did her friends know about that?
Yeah, they all knew.
Yeah,
they
know,
same
right?
thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone knows.
They make it worse because, like, she should be with you.
Ah. Like, I know.
Oh, my God.
Look at the way your ponytail lights up in the sun. And I guarantee you, Preston, Nick, one of those friends, unbeknownst to you, was friend-zoned by you.
Probably.
Yeah.
Hey, but you know what? I think in hindsight, it ended up working out.
Oh, know? My God. Yeah. But God for my wife.
When I was 19, I wanted to jump off a bridge.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And that's part of the message why I was trying to share that earlier, that, you know, it can, listen, as bad as that feels, most likely there's something coming down the road that's going to be perfect for you.
Look at how it's worked out. Look at how, you know, look at how... your edict is true, Preston, or at least your assessment. It's not as bad as you think it is.
I know.
Just let it breathe a little bit, and then the real right one comes along.
But I also remember how bad it was.
It hurts.
And it hurts.
Yeah.
But just know that down the road, there's
a pregnancy test to purchase.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, go to the dollar store first. They're only a dollar
there.
Cheap. Yes, before you spend $30 on a home.
But Alyssa, do you still are you in a relationship now, or is it and is it you still have your next in line guy?
No, so I actually never told him when me and the other guy broke up because I knew he would move in quick.
Yeah.
And so I actually ended up getting in a relationship and getting pregnant really quick, and that's how he found out.
Fortunately, the next guy who came along, jump on me. No, so do you think that if you were to, because you don't want a stalker, do you think the guy could get to that point? I mean, if he's hanging on all this time, I think, is that a possibility?
No. I think he saw his opportunity for 7 years, and then, like, when the eighth year rolled around, and I was...
8 years is the cutoff. Eight years!
That's the statute of limitations.
8 years, I know.
Probably keep it moving, yeah.
Wow.
But
wow.
We still, like, occasionally talk. We're not... We don't have negative feelings towards each other.
Yeah.
I just don't get the, like...
The romantic.
Yeah, see, your boyfriend's awful. Dump him, please.
There's another level to this, Preston. It's, and maybe a whole other topic, but there are women and guys who will use the friend zone status just for fun to pull someone along.
Oh yeah,
with the false possibility.
Yeah,
and then use them for things like purchasing pregnancy.
Those
tests.
Are evil people.
I have a friend who's doing that right now. Yeah. A female friend, and she is doing it to a guy who is way too into her, but she doesn't care because she likes the benefits.
Oh,
there we go.
God, that's harsh.
Wait. What, yeah, she doesn't care about what? I'm sorry.
She even has him do her essays.
No, he's real.
are they like doing anything?
Yes. Okay, they're having a full on sexual relationship, but he is very much into her, and it's been a year and a half. And she does not want a boyfriend. She does not. She's been honest. Like, it's not like she's pulling punches here.
Okay.
She's telling him straight up, but he's way into her. She's not into him in that way, but she enjoys the sex. And she likes, but she likes being single.
I want to
clarify the essay.
Clarify the essay thing. I wasn't friend zoning that girl. I was using her.
You were using her.
Big difference.
You need to get the nomenclature correct.
I deserved all those friend zone things I got now that you brought that up, Steve. Yeah. Thank you very much. You're correct. So it all is a yin and yang, if you will.
Yeah.
But anyhow, it was cringeworthy video of this guy on Let's Make a Deal.
Okay.
I'll play it one more time of Wayne Brady's interviewing them, and this girl makes it clear that they're just friends, and he thinks they've been in a relationship. Even if it's fake, I don't care.
Yeah.
It's just you've had this happen.
That's awesome. Now, how long have you guys been together?
About 6 months.
That's it. It's new. Oh, it's newish.
We're friends.
And she's giggling, like giddy laughing the whole time.
That's it. It's new. Oh, it's newish.
We're friends. We're just friends, but he wants it.
Can we talk about this?
Did you hear? We're just friends, but he wants it, and then she's cut off.
Yeah.
He wants it to be more, is what she's about to say.
We're just friends, but he wants it.
Can we talk about this not in front of everyone,
Jesse?
It's complicated. My penis. A super small penis and a stupid mustache. I don't know what woman would sleep with him, but I really he's a great friend.
Oh, my God.
It's complicated. I'm single, guys.
I'm single.
Oh,
my God. Oh, my God. That's horrible.
I don't care if I give them your email so they can contact me.
Through him. Oh, it's horrible.
MMR's Day Off on the Slopes at Jack Frost Mountain is Friday, January 4th. Celebrate winter with the best lift ticket deal out there, along with the Pierre Robert live broadcast and a legendary happy hour with Jackson, live from the E2000 Lounge. MMR VIPs, you still have time to save money. Lift tickets are now just $20, but available only until supplies last or until noon on January 2nd. WMMR.com has the details. MMR's Day Off on the Slopes. Sip, ski, and be merry. Friday, January 4th at Jack Frost Mountain. From JFBB, where the snow comes first, and 93.3 WMMR, everything that rocks.
Every June 21st, without fail, we always talk about these two. Because their birthday's on the exact same day.
And we make a big thing out of it.
We make a big thing about it.
It was obviously meant to be.
It's not just the date, the year, the actual
everything.
Day.
Everything, yeah.
Please welcome Michael Gross and Meredith Baxter.
Yeah.
To our show this morning.
Hello, you wild crowd.
Thank you, guys.
We're sorry to be a little late. We were on every one of those jam streets that Kathy just mentioned.
Fastest reading I have ever heard. Fast and smooth and errorless. Well, thank you.
There's a science to it, and she's been doing it for a long time. She's very good at it. But, yeah, you found out the little secret that Philadelphia has a robust morning rush. So.
Oh, it does indeed.
Yeah.
But good to be here.
Where do you guys live?
Of Santa Barbara.
Okay. And how is traffic crazy like that there, or is it a little laid back?
Do you get out in rush hour traffic a lot, though? I don't imagine you would, right?
There's no rush hour.
The beauty of what we do for a living is we jump from one job to another, and we're never in the same rush hour traffic every day. I don't understand how people do it day after day.
It's horrific. But I wanted to bring up, Love Letters is what you guys are appearing in. And right. I've been familiar with this over the years. And I think over the years, as I've gotten older and you live a bit more of your life, like I don't think I ever quite appreciated it as much as I started to appreciate it later on as I encountered it. And it, because it's a story of people who are communicating through correspondence to people and addressing the different things that happened to them through their lives. It's a life lived through classic cards and letters and notes like that. Is that what attracts you guys to it?
What appeals to me is, besides the blessing of being able to work with Michael.
Yeah, I agree with her. It is a blessing.
you second that.
He was talking to me. it's the longevity of their relationship, the richness of it as the audience begins to see it unveil itself, and how their tie is so, they're so connected from what they yearn for and they long for what they get from each other, and how the attachment is always there, no matter how angry or divided they are. It's profound, and
that's pretty much the story. Now nobody has to come see it.
I saw it years ago, and I thought that it was very touching. But it starts to, you know, as you start to live more of your life, it puts it more in perspective.
You're absolutely right. It's like a great novel. I mean, there's stuff I read in high school and then college, and you come back later. Meredith and I have been doing this for about 30 years. We first started doing it in the 80s, I believe, in Beverly Hills, remember, at the Cannon.
Right.
And we grow older, there are different things that resonate with us in this piece, with these people in their lives, and it's fascinating. It never gets old in that respect. We get old.
You get old, but the truth of the matter is that
the material
there's
never does.
It's funny, and it's profound, and it's sad, and it's introspective, but it's cool in that way, and it's the staging is pretty, it's about as rudimentary as you can get. I mean, is that right?
The emphasis is certainly on the words.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in this piece, and the words are incredible. We just love it.
Do you? I mean, because you're sitting there and you're obviously doing the correspondence. You're reading, you know, notes and stuff like that. Is how much is committed to memory? How much do you sit there and, you know?
Well, there's familiarity.
Yeah.
Because we've done it so often, but it's new every time.
Yeah.
Because he will read me a letter that, something that he's writing to me, and it's like I hear it different because of a different inflection, and something that happened this afternoon is going to color how I am presenting my letter.
It's cool. And this is a favorite of actors and people who have had on-screen relationships or whatever, because, and you guys, you obviously come from family ties, and that was where we first knew of you as a couple, and then throughout the years, do you think the audience reacts more warmly to you because they know of you as a pair to begin with?
Yeah, there's an affection there that there's a sort of implied intimacy of just being a part of their lives for as long as we have. And so they're happy to see us, and we're happy to see them, quite frankly.
How many times have you performed the show? You said over 30 years. How many times?
I couldn't even imagine.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But here's the fun thing, that I think that that someone will be attracted. They may not know the love letters or how it's laid out, but they will come to the show maybe because they know us, but they will stay and use whatever we bring to it to have a wonderful theater experience, because it's so lovely to, because we are richer characters to them than if they hadn't known who we are.
I get it. Yeah, that makes sense.
That really is it's a wonderful marriage.
It's very cool. So over the years, you know, as you've done this, have you yourselves gotten let's not say vastly, but much different perceptions of your characters?
Oh, it keeps changing.
Okay.
Put it that way. If I stand apart from my character, for example, there's certain things I don't care for about him. As an actor, you're always an advocate, I think. You're always arguing for your character.
I've heard that said, that
I think it's a kind of advocacy.
If you're playing a villain, you like, or not that you're playing a villain, but you have to believe in the villain.
Well, you have to try to understand why. I don't think very few people get up out of bed every day. Oh, one or two, I know, maybe. But that say, I'm going to be the worst possible person I can today.
Yeah.
You know, they're thinking they're doing right in some perverted way.
Right.
They're defending themselves. They're advocating for a certain point of view. And so, as an actor, that's the point of view I take. I think these two are fascinating because they desperately need each other. That's why they stay in touch. They supply things to each other that otherwise don't have.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to ask about your field of work because you guys had mentioned the traffic and the beginning and not having to be a part of your daily lives, because being an actor, depending on what you actually do in that field, right now you guys are traveling from town to town, your show moves around and all that so forth. But when you had a show like Family Ties, were very successful. This is a regular gig. Is that as close to a 9-to-5 as you can get as an actor of having a television show that's a regular schedule shooting?
Not counting tape night, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was always a little bit at odds with it because I had led the gypsy life for so long. And then to finally get steady work was unusual and strange.
Double-edged sword?
Well, yeah, in a way, I had come from repertory theater, and I was more accustomed to playing 7 characters in a year than I was to play 1 character for 7 years,
right?
As we did on Family Ties. And I've often said to people, had I wanted steady work, I would have done something else for a living.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm more accustomed to the kind of freelance life, and that's probably one of the reasons why I haven't done another series. I kind of chafe at the idea of going to the same place every day.
The thing is, you guys instantly on that show resonated as such. Everyone I know perceived you as, those are cool parents. You obviously have a friendship that's lasted the test of time, and it's legitimate. You can't fake that. So there was that symmetry. But you both just came across as very warm instantly, which is not, you know, we talk about in radio when you have a morning show or a collection of people, getting chemistry is the hardest thing.
Meredith can fake warmth for short periods of time.
She's good at
just
that.
Enough time to take
wow.
the show.
Yeah.
I picked up on that when you were walking in. I was like, what a phony.
Right.
What's interesting about that family dynamic, and I know this now as a parent of 3, is that even though you have these 3 children that come from the same beings, that they're all 3 of my kids are completely different.
Isn't that weird?
And you have to parent them all separately. You can't parent them the same way. And so you have, you know, your 3 children. You got, you know, the brainiac politician. Then you have the you know, the kind of free-spirited, not as brainiac. And then you have the, not counting Brian Bonsall, who came by later.
Right,
but
right.
Tina Yothers, who was, you know, she was a jock, you know. That's so true to life.
That's why it resonates.
I think, one of the great blessings of that show was simply the writing. It was that simple. I was, in some ways, I felt like simply a conduit for wonderful writing.
Gary David Goldberg.
Gary David Goldberg.
The creator. And he wrote
Mark
a lot.
Mark Lawrence.
Yes.
Michael Whitehorn.
Alan Yeager.
Marvelous people.
Have people.
Andy Borowitz was there for a while. So you follow Andy. Mm-hmm. Andy and Susan Borowitz.
I have to say to you, Meredith, when I've seen you play, you to the point of being jokingly insincerely warm, when you set your mind to playing a baddie or you are a scary mofo.
Thank you very much.
I get my nickname for her. Scary mofo.
I think I forget what show I've seen a couple times. It was one I can't remember where, but I remember like, geez, God Almighty.
Probably Betty Broderick.
Betty Broderick was a great story. Yeah, but there was another show. I remember you playing a nefarious type, and it ran so against the grain of the Keaton family. A and B, you seem to savor it so much. Is that fun when you can tie into something that's totally contrary to what you're known for?
Yes. And I remember reading a script once, and it was about a woman who is a little off, and you see her talking to her little boy, and he starts asking her questions about his childhood. He's only about 7, and he doesn't understand images that keep flashing to him. And you realize she's saying, oh, I'm going to have to kill him. I went, yes! I want to know, how does she get up in the morning?
Right.
Where does she go?
Yeah.
What happens to her that that's where she's taking herself?
We're perpetually fascinated by characters like that, you know?
Yeah,
that's pretty much Meredith's parenting style. I'm going to have to kill him.
Military discipline. you.
It's natural. You're the way you chat with each other is the way my wife and I chat with each other. We're constantly
and you guys can't see Meredith actually hitting Michael when we're in the middle. She's actually slapping him a little.
That's
bit.
What's nice about radio. You do not see the bruises.
Yeah. I have to also. I'm a huge fan of Tremors and the whole. It's always had a sense of humor about itself, right from the first film with you and Reba McEntire and Kevin Bacon and Fred Ward. And is that just a lot of fun to go do
it
that?
It is an absolute lark.
Yeah.
It is an absolute lark. And
you know, like
Tremors 6,
yeah.
A Cold Day in Hell is coming out May 1st.
I've seen them all. I've seen them all. What I love is you take a character that could easily be overly cartooned, and he's got Bert. He's got a soul. He's a good guy. He's got his issues, but he's instead of just a one dimensional cartoon character, he's got fun to him.
I like to think of Bert, the way I approach him as underly cartooned.
Okay.
Yes, right.
I never
quite go too far.
Yeah, just, no, but always funny.
Cartoon.
And you always like him, and you're always rooting for him to win against the Graboids.
Right. Very good.
Yeah, oh, you know his stuff. Yeah.
Got your stuff down.
Michael, I wanted to ask you about nostalgia in general, because there's a trailer that's out right now. It's called Won't You Be My Neighbor, and it's about Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. And I watched the trailers, 2.5 minutes, and I got teary-eyed watching it. You know, it brought me back to my childhood. And obviously with you guys with Family Ties, there's a lot of nostalgia attached to that. But it can be dangerous living in nostalgia. You know, you don't want to live in the past too much. So how do you separate the acting from the past and the acting from the present?
I think what's going to happen is they'll come to see us because they know us. And the material itself is going to make that difference, because the material takes you in whole different ways. It really is quite a brilliant piece. Absolutely. That will just take them to a new place.
I think it's no different than any actor or that you see in a movie, and you know them as this character in a movie, and then you go see him in another movie. Like Michael, I saw you on Broadway in Macbeth, and we went Kelsey Grammer was Macbeth. I wasn't expecting to see Frasier Macbeth. I expected Kelsey Grammer to portray this character.
Macbeth with his radio show and Seattle radio show. But it's the truth. I mean, that's if it gets you in the door and people are then experience this play and enjoy it, then that's a plus.
Right.
I think there's a lot of people who, to Nick's point, probably who have don't almost become resentful of what got them to the dance, and that ends up seeming to haunt them, and some people have. But you guys have always embraced, but you've done far more work than just Family Ties, and that works in your favor as well.
But it is a classic, and it's difficult to imagine anyone not asking us about that because it's like how do you approach Lucille Ball without mentioning? Oh, did you do the Lucy show?
Right.
I mean, no, it was a classic.
Don't bring up Lucy.
Yeah, right. I don't want to talk about her.
Don't bring up I Love Lucy. Yeah, she freaks.
But seriously, it's a classic. Is how could people not talk about it? And it was something, frankly, at the time that I think I took a little for granted. You don't know you're making history at the time.
It meant so much to people.
We were just talking about the fact that what was at Paramount the same time we were doing it? It was at Paramount Studios. Happy Days was a studio away. Joni Loves Chachi.
Cheers. Wow.
Cheers.
Wow.
It was a great time. It's one of the last of the sort of great
TV
great
era
sitcoms. Oh, Laverne and Shirley was still running as well, too. So Taxi.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, great stuff. And these are all in adjoining studios. So you don't realize at the time that you're making some history and establishing it. You're just going to work every day.
Right.
And hoping it turns out well and worrying, will you be canceled next year? You don't realize that history is being made. So I'm happy for that time.
And also,
I'm happy to talk about it.
We don't... doing the show, I never had a sense of how other people were experiencing it. So when people would come up to me years later and go, I wanted you to be my mother.
Wow.
And I thought, well, because I had really good writers. My writers at home are not as good.
I just want to go on record as saying, I never wanted Meredith to be my mother.
And there's the relief in that.
Well, sure. She takes great comfort in that.
If you're just jumping in, Meredith Baxter, Michael Grosser here, Love Letters at Bucks County Playhouse. And you know what, Michael, you're speaking of making something that stands the test of time is kind of historical. It's still relevant and referenced in works today because Ready Player One in the book, there's a lot of references to family ties. And I don't know if you've seen.
Yes.
Is absolutely.
Well, Spielberg was a good friend of Gary David Goldberg.
Right. Oh, there you go.
He knew Gary, and he borrowed Michael Fox from Family Ties during the filming of Family Ties to do Back to the Future.
Wow.
So I'm not a bit surprised.
Meredith, you got a solo shout out in Deadpool. Are you familiar with that?
Someone said that, but I've never heard how.
Well, we've got it for you.
Oh, nice.
All right. So, and that movie, hugely successful. One of the best superhero movies to ever come out, by the way.
I don't know if I got a career bump out of this.
Listen, this is the reference to you. You ready? Okay, here we go.
Anything on my bucket list would involve public nudity.
Try me giving Meredith Baxter Burney a Dutch oven.
No, receiving a Dutch oven for Meredith Baxter Burney.
Okay.
We're using the Burney, but yeah.
And they're using a term I don't know.
You don't know what a Dutch oven is?
Yeah.
Michael, do you know what a Dutch oven is?
Can I say this? Go ahead.
It's when it's two people are in bed together and one of them farts and then pulls the covers over your head.
My career is made. Now
Family Ties seems like a blip compared to...
That's just the reference she was looking for.
This is so dismaying.
Of course it is.
I think that's a compliment.
An honor, actually.
Is it?
Coming from Deadpool? Yes, absolutely.
You're in high company. It's a male sense of humor.
Yes.
It sort of is.
Yeah. Welcome to my world.
Mark was out, you can't.
Michael, one of my favorite places in this country is Montauk, New York. And the show The Affair is based in Montauk.
Right.
And that is why I started watching it. Were you on it or are you going to be on the next season?
You know, I've done two guest spots as Maura Tierney's psychiatrist within the last couple months. And I keep having to remind myself, I got to find out when these are on because, you know, I kind of lose track. You do the job and then I like, oh, I never saw that.
People, so it's going to be on this new season.
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
My guess is you did.
I love those scenes. I loved Maura. I used to be, for a couple of years, I played Noah Wiley's son on ER. And so I'd run into Maura a lot there. We never had work together because I was mostly with Noah, but, I really do like her as an actress, and we've just had fun together.
You know, Kathy's a big fan, of the series.
And wait, you know what Meredith was in? I think it was only one episode, but Brothers and Sisters, which aired on ABC, that was like, they make fun of me because I still am upset that show was canceled.
That was a good show.
It was a great show.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of stuff. You both did soap operas at one point, did you not?
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of being playing
same
a
same one, I think
did
we
you
did,
young
we
and
both
restless?
Did Young and the Restless?
Right.
Did you
or
enjoy?
As we like to refer to it, the Young and the Rest of Us.
I hear that nothing can compare to that grind of being when it was in its heyday, and all the networks had multiple soap operas on at one time, and that was a boot camp for young actors where you just you had to run and gun basically. Was that your experience?
Yeah, Meredith, you too?
Very, very much.
Yeah.
So it's like I had, on Family Ties, we would, well, just on a regular film show, you would have to learn like about 7-8 pages a day. And that's pretty speedy. On this show, 60 pages a day.
Wow.
You're doing an hour show every day.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have done that for very long, and I didn't do it for very long. They were like you are so out of here.
Yeah.
No, I did. I think I maybe did it for 4 or 5 months and something like that, and I thought, I can't imagine doing this all the time because I love the time involved in collaboration, and there's not time to ask questions like, wait a minute, why is he threatening to kill himself today? He wasn't suicidal yesterday.
Right.
We don't have time to go into that. Just say you're going to kill yourself.
Yeah.
It's like, why? No, don't ask why. Just kill yourself. Okay.
I love the way
and
they're
come
paced.
Back as your dead brother.
Right.
Okay. And there's that look when you get the news, you sort of look away as if the geese are flying. Oh, my goodness. Yes, right. That's right. I never put those two together.
Yes, and I got to say,
my mother is my sister.
What?
Fascinating.
It's the end of scene look that I think can create.
Yeah.
Terrible acting habits.
Yes.
And so that's why you guys got out of there pretty quickly.
Everything that's happening in your mind expressed on your face as they slowly die, the tank out, is just endless.
Yeah, yeah, and it happens all the time.
I think they got rid of me because I was asking too many questions. I really was. I was like, but this doesn't make sense. Don't pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
That's
the
great.
Writer behind the curtain.
Do you guys believe in fate? Do you guys believe that fate maybe brought you guys together and kept you guys together for as long as they have?
Meredith?
I don't know.
No?
I don't so much believe in fate as what you do with those times you come together.
Right.
I mean, you know, what you make.
Have you guys worked?
You make your own destiny.
With anybody as much as you guys have worked with each other?
We just figured out the other day. Can I tell them how old we are? They can do the math.
I already know how old you are.
All right. We're 70 years old. I started doing Family Ties at age 35. We've known each other for half our lives.
Wow. That's phenomenal.
I was 25 then, too, wasn't I?
Yeah.
Wow. Michael,
did you play a shrink on Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I played a dermatologist on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
What was that experience like?
Because it was great. I spent the entire episode trying to get Larry David to remove his clothing so I could get a good look at
him. That's right.
He was very resistant.
Did you have a script at all, or was it just an idea as to what the show was going to be?
It was an idea.
Okay.
It was. That's one of the things I loved about it is I never had to learn lines.
Yeah.
No, it was purely, you know, they give you an idea and you go in several directions with it, and then they'll stop and say, okay, what works, what doesn't, pare that down, don't talk too much on that. So it's basically a kind of.
You did play a shrink on improv. I think it was the last episode that Michael J. Fox was on, a Spin City, didn't you?
How much do you guys watch? How do you know all this stuff?
He watches
and Meredith, all we do is watch TV.
And Meredith was on Spin City playing his mother. Mm-hmm. And I played.
That's perfect.
And I played his shrink on the final episode of Spin City, and it was one of the greatest lead-in lines. His regular shrink, the receptionist said, his regular shrink would not be there today. And he was expecting to meet his shrink, and said, he's not going to be there. And Michael said, what are the chances that somebody's going to walk in that door? I'm going to feel comfortable with him. And then I walked in. Yeah. Oh, hi, I'm Dr. So-and-so.
Oh, that's great.
That's great.
Great. The audience did not know I was...
Did Bill Lawrence write that?
I forget who wrote that. The audience did not know I was going to be there, and they were, and it was just great.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Yeah.
How is he doing? Do you know Michael J. Fox?
I ask him that because it's one of the frequent questions I get. And I had breakfast with him maybe about 6 months ago in New York or something like that. And I said, what do I tell people? He says, tell them I'm doing fine. Hmm. Because it is a frequent question.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, Parkinson's is a progressive disease. It never gets better, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. But he's found some medication that he was taking, and I thought he never looked better.
I hadn't
for a long time. He was in great shape.
An interview fairly recently, and whatever that drug is, it suppresses a dramatic amount of what he got. I mean, it is.
I'll sell you some of that drug. Maybe
sure.
You'll calm down a little bit.
It's quite possible. But it's great to see him able to do that. And, you know, that's it's wonderful. You guys get asked as the conduit for his health. I'm
and
sure.
The friendships are still there. We
that's great.
Meredith and I have seen him when we've been in New York together. And we, it was one of those shows without a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Everybody enjoyed each other.
That's great.
And still keep in touch to a degree.
Always.
Yeah, we liked
even Skippy?
Each other.
even Skippy.
We liked, everybody got along beautifully, really. Truly.
That's great. That's one of those rare moments. We're the same way. We're all,
lucky
you know,
us.
We love to work
lucky
with
us.
Each other, and it's a beautiful thing. And this oh, I'm sorry. That means our time is up.
That's our cue.
That's it. I was trying to find a way to fit that in there somewhere. I'm sorry. Our time is up. Listen, we are so delighted you guys came by here today. We've been big fans for a long, long time. We hope you enjoy your time here.
We're having a great time thus far. It's been fun with you this morning. Thank
really
you.
Sweet.
Thank you so much. Meredith Baxter and Michael Gross.
Yeah. WMMR's live stream. Our daily programming available anytime, anywhere on your desktop, tablet, smartphone, or open the new MMR skill with Alexa. Great sound quality and the occasional bonus song. Nice. Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
Start with one that hits close to me. Police say a man stole golf balls from a private country club and resold them to a driving range.
What the f***?
But wait till you hear about how many he stole over time. Joseph Kalenda, who's 58, was arrested on a warrant last week and charged with second-degree larceny. A search warrant executed at his home in August found in excess of 2,500 golf balls, many of them stamped with the Patterson Club logo. Police began investigating in August after a club member found Patterson's golf balls while using the driving range at Great Brook Sports. Now, officials told police there were three instances this summer where they discovered golf balls left for members to use were taken. The thefts happened, it ended up being a total of about 20,800 golf balls.
20,000 golf balls?
Yeah, that this guy stole.
Don't they pay people to go into, like, the ponds and stuff and get the golf balls out of those?
If you have a lot of water on the golf course, sometimes they will. But they also have, you know, a really nice club will have brand new, really good golf balls that they'll use for their driving.
So he was
range.
Stealing and reselling.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So a detective went to the facility and purchased a bucket of balls at the driving range. He found golf balls with the Patterson logo on there, and they talked to the manager, and they said that this guy sold them to him. So they busted him.
You have my balls.
Now he's been charged with a second-degree larceny for stealing golf balls. A Texas zoo was forced to close for the day after a wild mountain lion was spotted roaming around the park. A security guard discovered the stray feline inside the El Paso Zoo at approximately 6 a.m. Friday and alerted authorities. Officials were not able to find the mountain lion in the office hours. Have I presented this story before?
I don't think so.
Okay, all right. And the zoo remained closed as the search continued.
He did
continued.
One about golf balls.
Okay, I remember that one. The animal does not belong to the park as the El Paso Zoo does not have a mountain lion exhibit.
So it was just a visiting the park.
Yeah. It's possible the big cat came
from
a desert area near the southwest Texas city. Let's see. A man has been arrested after a fire extinguisher inspection led to the alleged discovery of child porn.
Oh, man. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Employees at the Shadow Creek Apartments were collecting fire extinguishers for inspection on Friday. When they reached the suspect's apartment, they were inside. They found what appeared to be a slideshow of child pornography.
Are you kidding me?
On his computer in the living room. Police were called and went to the apartment. They confirmed the existence. Police say the suspect, James Drew Taylor, was located at his place of employment, and he allegedly told police that he did download the images from the internet. Now, tenants of this place were notified by three emails prior to the inspections that they should put their fire extinguishers outside for collection.
So, but listen, honestly, in this case, I'm always glad when the child pornographers are dumb.
Yeah. Yep, precisely.
Anything that leads to them being captured is A-OK in my book.
Exactly. Apparently, a cute cat can be considered offensive to some. The U.S. Embassy in Canberra, Australia, has apologized on behalf of the Department of State, which accidentally sent out a test email featuring a photo of a cat dressed in a Cookie Monster costume.
So what's the big problem?
According to the Australian Associated Press, the photo was titled Cat Pajama Jam.
What's wrong with this?
And was sent with an email titled Meeting as part of a fake meeting invitation sent by the Department of State to recipients.
This is adorable.
I want to work for this government.
Yeah. The U.S. Embassy's apology reads in part, sorry to disappoint those of you who were hoping to attend the cat pajama party, but such an event falls well outside our area of expertise. It was a training error made by one of our new staff testing our email newsletter platform. So it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek apology.
All right.
But
I don't know who would be offended by this adorable little picture.
It is super cute. Look at that. What would you do for a bag of Doritos? That's the question. Well, the sheriff's department is
handy.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it's part of the thing. You were just asking.
No.
Okay. I do like those.
Story.
Yeah.
Handies or Doritos?
Andy, both. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
It's a win-win for me.
What's going on?
Right. Yeah.
We're negotiating here, Nick.
Oh, you mean give or get?
Well, I think it would get. I thought you were saying give, so.
Yeah, yeah, sure. They're good.
The Sheriff's Department in San Bernardino, California, posted on Sunday about their adventure luring a pig the size of a miniature horse back home.
Oh, I saw this.
And they write that responding officers knew where the pig lived due to previous calls, and they lured him back home with Doritos.
Look at the size of this thing, Kathy.
Oh, my God.
And they were literally dropping Doritos on the road, like, one at a time, like a trail of breadcrumbs. And they were, and it was just from the deputy's lunch, and the pig followed her and was brought all the way back home with that. Isn't that great?
Yeah, that little piggy went home.
Yes, it did.
My wife follows people on Instagram that thought they were getting a miniature pig. And so when they bought it as a piglet, it was tiny.
They didn't realize it was.
Now, and it lives in their home.
Yeah.
It's not a barn.
Oh, God.
Or a farm.
Like 300 pounds, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. Mary Mead Farm has one of those huge pigs.
Yeah, they can get really, really big.
Giant.
One last story. A group of elderly female residents at the Milton Lodge, a retirement home in England, have been treated to a meal served by scantily clad butlers.
Wow.
Claire Martin, activities co-coordinator at the Milton Lodge, said it was...
activities?
Yeah. Yeah. It was 89-year-old Joan Corp.
And like some spotted dick.
Who thought up the idea. Martin says whenever you ask Joan what she wants that day, she always says she wants a man.
Yeah.
And these guys are in like Chippendale costumes.
And they, from what I understand, Preston, they will have sex with these women.
Okay. So...
You understand.
The activities coordinator said, so we weren't surprised when she wanted it to be her wish. The home hired men from a company called Hunks and Trunks to serve residents a 3-course dinner. The gentlemen were told to do some, quote, harmless flirting. And the
they don't have sex then.
The eldest resident at the home, Dahl Jenkins, who is 99, said she loved the butlers in the buff and has requested for them to come back for her 100th birthday.
Well, that's sweet.
Yeah, so they had a good
getting
time.
Getting all turned on.
Yep. All right, there you go. That's what I have in the bizarre file for you.
Just like the telly.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Hey, what's up? It's Preston. Listen, I'd like to thank Jack Frost Mountain for sponsoring today's podcast. Jack Frost and Big Boulder Ski Areas are officially open for the season. And WMMR's Day Up on the Slopes with Pierre Jackson is January 4th. Tickets are available now at WMMR.com while supplies last. JFBB, where the snow comes first.
If you love paying for shipping, you're going to hate Steven Singer. Free shipping both ways, making return and exchanges easy. Visit him online at IHateStevenSinger.com or at the other corner of 8th and Walnut. Steven Singer Jewelers. One place, one price.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, I'd like you to make it a perfectly personal new year with our friends at Hannah Stone. Make it personal. Make it about you. You spent enough time over the holidays thinking about everybody else. Let's think about it. You now. There's over 50 locations of Hand and Stone Massage and Facial Spa in Delaware, South Jersey, Philadelphia, the Lehigh Valley, and the spa services start at just $59.95. Take a look at what I'm talking about. Hand and Stone Massage and Facial Spa. Go to handandstone.com today.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
We're excited to welcome them back to our studio. Please say hello to Connor, Dominic, Joe, and Philip of Nothing But Thieves.
Yeah!
This morning. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to see you guys once again.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us.
And listen, we know how it is for musicians this early in the morning. It's ridiculous. This is the opposite of when you're up and getting around.
Yeah.
And especially you, Connor, as a singer. And you've got such a melodic voice, man. And you have a really high register. It's got to be, you have to hate doing this.
Oh, it's all right. I mean, can you swear on this station?
No.
I won't then.
If it's some sort of cryptic...
We're not. I'm just going to say, our bus is awful.
Is it?
That's all it is.
Your bus is awful?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I'm tired. It's all good.
There's been some budget cuts on this tour. We're now trying to be a band that makes some money. This is a thing, apparently.
I'm just being honest.
So you decided you want a profit margin?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
With an avant-garde approach.
Yes, it's a new concept for us.
But don't you remember the days you fantasized riding around in a tour bus and being out on the road?
It's so funny, like, all your mates, like, you're living the dream, you're on the tour bus, you're like, It's literally just like a cardboard box. Like, it is the least glamorous thing. Like,
it was built when I was born.
Oh, really? Jesus, yeah. Well, you remember that old Jackson Brown song about, you know, on the tour bus, and it seems so romantic, and it's and I've never heard any musician say it's anything else but a hellhole.
Go and snow our crew and tell me that's romantic.
Right.
Wow, you guys have some big gigs coming up this year. You have Coachella. You're doing the Reading Festival. You're doing the Leeds Festival.
Yeah.
Have you played some of these events before?
We've done Reading and Leeds before. It's kind of one of our favorite festivals back home.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. We've not done Coachella, though. Yeah,
it's the first time for us.
Now, Coachella is a weird thing because it's it has a lot of gravitas. It's respected, but it also has a high douchebag factor that attends it. So it's got this split thing, but if the bill's solid... You know, it still has, there's a lot of reverence for it, but
it's
also
beautiful too. Yeah, so yeah. I don't know if you've ever been in the Coachella Valley, but I was there not for Coachella, but for Old Chella. So it was Paul McCartney and The Who.
For retirees.
No, it was Paul McCartney, The Who, Bob Dylan, Pink Floyd. Yeah, like, it was awesome, but just that area with the stones. Yes,
young,
the mountains in the background. It's a beautiful, beautiful place to play.
Cool.
Yeah,
it's a lot like England.
Yeah,
yeah, very similar.
Very similar.
Who have you guys made friends with band wise? Because we hear a lot about, you know, not as much these days, but bands can get into
rivalries
and things like that. But there's also a lot of camaraderie, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, we've made a few friends.
Yeah, when you're on the road, like, it's always funny at festivals because you just, it's like one big party backstage. You've got a dressing room next to somebody else, so you just get talking. But I'm trying to think of other Brits you may have had. We're good mates with Bastille. Do you know those guys?
Yeah, I love those guys, yeah.
Bastille. We bump into Royal Blood every now and then.
I was going to mention them. Royal Blood have been by here as well.
Yeah. Their first appearance on American Radio was in the studio.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're cool guys, and they're obviously killing it over here. They've been out with Queens of Stone Age, haven't they? Which is
Highly Suspect.
But you know, Highly
Suspect.
Yeah, I like those guys a lot as well.
Yeah. You bring up the festival shows. We have the MMRBQ, which is a big festival that's coming up. And, you see that, because when you go backstage and, you know, everyone just sort of, it is, I guess for you guys, in a way, it is close to like a party. I mean, you're performing, but you're also socializing with like-minded people.
Yeah, and it's just nice, like, it's just a cool environment. I think everyone's just, is there for a good time, and it's cool to, like you say, catch up with people and you can share. So you're all in the same sort of boat and you all have the same lifestyles. So
right.
You talk about sort of similar stuff and same experiences.
There was an article, we talked about this on the air a couple of years ago, some guys that were in Westchester, they were English guys, and they were saying in America, with an English accent, it is so easy to get laid that it is ridiculously easy. You don't even have to say that you're in a band.
Yeah, I think the accent thing is still... like alive.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
It's a big...
It's weird. Like, even if you just go order some food, like, it's a talking point. You know what I mean?
And Well, listen, I went and grabbed Connor some, we say water here in Philadelphia. Wait, but I said, do you want something to drink? He said, yeah, I'll take some more water.
Water.
And I'm walking down the hall going, water. If I said water, I would get chicks. I would turn, you know, even this thing right here, he said water.
I remember I was at a bar recently. It was one of our previous tours in the US, and I ordered a drink at the bar, and the barmaid was like, why are you putting on this accent like that? She was like, it does not impress me.
Well, there was
I got accused of not being British, and then I happened to have my passport in my pocket, so I sort of just...
That's hilarious, but there was a story of guys who were going around who were faking Australian accents. That's cheesy.
Yeah.
Does it work in reverse? Does it work for Americans in England?
I think it's the opposite.
No, you're right. We've heard that as well, that it's a complete turn-off.
No, it's less common to get, you guys, like, especially like in the middle of nowhere of the UK, like in London, it's quite common to get Americans out and about.
Right.
If you're just in a random city, then you'd be a bit like, why have you come to Grimsby?
What's your story?
Why are you in Basildon?
Yeah, we went to Ireland several years ago, and we were in Dublin, and we couldn't find anybody with a freaking Irish accent.
We're there to do a St. Patrick's Day broadcast in Dublin.
Yeah.
We're up in the, what is like the Sky Bar,
Gravity Bar
at the Guinness Brewery, half the people in there are Spanish. There's like there's nobody from
tourist central.
All tourists.
And then we went to a small town and had a great freaking time.
That was great.
With the locals. Well, listen, we you guys are all tuned up, and we'd love to hear. What are we gonna hear this morning?
We're gonna play Sorry first.
All right, let's check it out. This is Nothing But Thieves on MMR.
You might kill me with desire. Want me to know why? Something that you do to me. I run away like mercury. And I know you think it's rough when you're trying to patch yourself. But I say all you want is love. You just say I drink too much. Maybe I'm effective, or maybe I'm dumb. I'm sorry, sorry for what I've done. Maybe I'm bad natured, or maybe I'm young. I'm sorry.
Sounded great.
Nothing But Thieves on 93.3 WMMR. That song, Sorry, by the way, in the version that you're hearing right now, I understand you guys have the album is Broken Machine, but there's a deluxe edition. There's a standard deluxe edition. There's four more songs, and you've got an acoustic version of that song on that deluxe. Do you like one better than the other? Do you like the plugged in? Do you like the acoustic? Because it's a really moody song, you know?
I think they both got their merits, really.
They're similar.
Needs.
What's that?
Different versions for different needs.
Okay.
But those are similar. I love the album, and Particles particularly is my favorite song, piano version at the end of it. Cool. I was begging Bridget here to have you guys perform that song here today, but it's on a regular rotation on my iPhone. I listen to it at least once a day.
Well, we were going to bring it in towards the end of the year terms of service.
I think we're going to try it, but there's a reason we don't play it.
Yeah.
Because I can't play it.
Oh. So
when we got to the studio, tried to play the piano part, and it was so bad at it, I had to record my left hand first. My right
hand second. No kidding.
Yeah. Wow. This is crazy.
And even then, the piano part still gets, like, abused for being so bad. People are just like, this is a dreadful piano part. And I'm like, I'm trying, man.
Well, listen, the finished product
we fooled everyone.
Amazing. Yeah. No, I don't care. I don't care if you did it one key at a time. Yeah. The end product is just a beautiful, beautiful song.
He saved it by wailing over it.
Anybody can be a musician. All you have to do is go in and record it any way that you want, and then you can have a song, too.
Yeah. I remember hearing an interview. It might have been with Eddie Van Halen or something like that. It was talking about they went into the song and they went in the studio and they write these songs and they had these backup vocal parts. Well, they did the music, they did the main vocals, and then they added the backup vocals. And they were about to go on tour. Eddie realized that he couldn't sing and play the backup vocal part at the same time. He's like, "Dear, I never rehearsed this.
Yeah,
I never tried this, and I can't figure out how to do it." So you kind of you got to be conscious of that when you're in the studio, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, we do always try and like. Apart from that, we can do in the studio, we do live, you know.
We kind of have a figure it out later attitude. Like, if it sounds good in the studio, we'll figure it out.
We'll do it on the night.
Do it on the night. On the night of the performance.
Yeah, we'll do it live.
You
did
some cool things, though, you know, after the album was released on your Vivo account and ended up on YouTube, where you did strip some of your songs down.
Yeah.
Which was like a nice treat, I think, to anybody that's a fan of the band. You know, obviously, I love the studio version, I think, but I always like to hear alternative versions of the songs that I like.
Yeah, it's cool. It lets the song breathe a bit. Mm. I think sometimes when you're in the studio, there's a lot of tricks you can do to it and production tricks, and it's nice to hear it in a sort of pure form.
It's funny because sometimes there are you know, a song is great on its album version, but you end up, like I think Jane says, Jane's Addiction, the live version is not as good as the album version. You know, usually the live version just has a little element to it that you expect to be there.
Well, I like that about our shows. We get kind of mixed feedback in terms of, like, we prefer the live shows to the album, we prefer the album to live shows. And I kind of like that there's this kind of, I don't know, the live shows.
A debate.
But it kind of offers a different side of what we can do. I don't think you can always capture that in a studio recording. I think they're two kind of different beasts, but...
Yeah.
I think we just try and make our live shows just as exciting as possible.
Well, and that's right now the state of the industry, the state of the music industry is performance focused.
Oh, yeah.
It used to be the other way around, and now the recorded stuff supports the concerts.
Well, there's nothing worse than going to a gig and being sort of underwhelmed or hearing that the singer can't do what they've done on the record.
Right, right.
Auto-tune or a million takes done or, you know, a load of tricks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we try and sort of... do what we've done on the album, I guess.
Dominic, I have to ask, does anybody ever mistake you for Russell Brand?
I was just about to say, when you were talking earlier, he takes great pride in that.
Your voice is similar to his, and you have a slight bit of an appearance of him.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just the way I talk.
Yeah?
Lothario.
I don't know what it is.
Where's he from? I mean, obviously, I know he's from our
area. He's from Grays, isn't he?
It's literally like 20 minutes down the road.
Yeah.
Grays is as bad as it sounds, by the way.
Oh, really? Grays?
Grays.
Yeah. Well, so my friend is from Manchester, and I was with her last night, and I was telling her that you guys were coming in, and she wanted to know where you were from, and I said, well, I would say Essex.
Yeah.
Okay. Essex and she's like, that's like the Jersey Shore of England.
Yeah, pretty much.
She said, it's all like fake tans. Yeah. And
Really?
It's really quite embarrassing.
I'm proud of that, but
well, have you in fact yourself got a chance to feel up Katy Perry or no?
No, not as of yet.
Okay,
but you know,
well, you're young.
Yeah, I mean, the Russell Brand thing's funny because I sound like him, but there's no wit or intellect or any kind of, like, you know, it's just absolute nonsense, like drivel.
I hear he's a mean piano player, too, from around.
Right. He can actually play it.
Yeah. Nice. All right, can we get one more song out of you guys?
Sure. Yeah.
All right, what are we going to hear this time, Connor?
Oh, we're going to do a classic.
Yeah.
Play Trip Switch.
Awesome.
All right, excellent. This is Nothing But Thieves on MMR.
All right.
Someone who loves, we can waste through the universe. Star Wars with anonymous brothers, just
Get my love in a digital baggage trip. Switch, trip, switch. What we do when the power's off? Do we do when the lights go? What we do when the power's off? Do we do when the lights go? Down, 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 down. Give me dinner, cause I need it. How our love's satisfied, not for me, should I be craving it? Give me yours and give me all the others. Trip, switch, trip, switch. What we do when the power's out? Do we do when the lights go? What we do when the power's out? Do we do when the lights go? Down, 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 down.
Heavy vocal demand.
Nothing but thieves on 93.3 WMMR. Yeah, I was wondering about, you know, Connor and the way you sing, and it's very expressive, and you know, you go up into these falsettos and you use this beautiful vibrato and everything. How old were you when you started experimenting vocally like that? Because, you know, as kids, they, you know, old McDonald had a farm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, was that you?
That's the funniest thing. I don't know. I've got a fairly musical family. My dad's a really good singer and did a lot of kind of bluesy gospel stuff as a kid. He did growing up, so I kind of.
It probably comes to you the first time you zip your nuts up, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I remember seeing, like, Steve, we saw a video of that Amy Winehouse documentary, and here she is, like, you know, 12, 13 years old, and she's singing Happy Birthday.
Yeah.
And everybody's going, Happy Birthday to you, and she's all over the place, just branching out vocally.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just, she just had it.
She had it, yeah.
You know, and I assume you had it at an early age, too, right?
Yeah, I guess so. It's just ingrained in me.
That's cool.
Just push myself and progress, and
there are some bands that I like that they come from musical families, and every now and again their father will come out and perform with them. Does that ever happen with you guys?
No. As much as he'd like that and take break, when we went on a family holiday once, there was a Freddie Mercury impersonator. I never told you this.
Freddie Mercury impersonator.
My dad, and they asked someone in the audience to come and do like a sing off. And my dad beat him.
Really?
I was like, oh, wow. I was really impressed as a kid, yeah. He, like, held a note longer than this impersonator could do. I was like, wow.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
That is awesome.
I was impressed.
Well, we thank you guys for coming by again this morning. You're welcome here anytime. You guys are doing great, and congratulations. I know you're touring, really working really, really hard. Keep it up, and
thanks,
we appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. Thank you so much.
You got it. Nothing but thieves, guys. Great band. Fantastic.
93.3 WMMR presents Preston and Steve's Totally Office Calendar 2019. 12 magnificent months featuring the most gorgeous girls and our loveliest listeners.
On sale now for just $15 in the MMR Rock Shop at WMMR.com. Order by December 10th to have it in time for the holidays. Or get your hands on a free copy at an upcoming calendar raid while meeting the girls and the members of the show.
Details at WMMR.com. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
There was a study that came out, a new survey, actually. It's a British survey. We've been seeing a lot of British surveys lately.
You mean in England?
Yeah, and we're headed to London tomorrow.
Well, we can actually go verify the validity of this.
Well, it's about sex injuries.
Oh, yeah.
And they are more common than they think. So the Euroclinics company had asked British people about their sex habits and found that 15% of participants have hurt themselves while getting down and dirty.
There was just a report. There was somebody, I was reading there, the newspaper, The Sun, and we're in anticipation of going over there to tabloidy newspaper. And there was a woman who was suing. She was having sex, and she, I guess, was in the superior position, up and fell off, and now is in a wheelchair. And she was, I think she sued the bed manufacturer.
Yeah, I had it in the bizarre file.
Was that it? Okay, yeah.
She was launched off of it.
There we go. Okay, yeah.
And
yeah,
she's paralyzed.
Yes, paralyzed, yeah.
Yeah. So, if you guys know, this isn't technically an injury. You ever had a cramp?
Oh, yes.
Doing it?
Oh, yeah.
That sucks. Because that kills it.
I mean,
like, you're done. Like a Charlie horse or something like that. And it's like, oh, ah!
Or they think you're really hamming it up.
Right. Like,
this guy's really going for gold. Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that would fall under, that's not necessarily.
Have you ever had a really bad one?
Cramp?
Yeah. I have. So, because, listen, you can stretch all you want, but there's some positions you only are going to do, you know, when you're having sex.
You mean you can't do those at the gym?
Yes, they won't let you. I'm sorry, I'm having sex with this bench.
I'm sorry, I'm doing the wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I believe, the most injuries reported, and I will be delicate with my description.
I appreciate it.
No problem, Bill. Are small tears.
Oh.
Of the
hair and sex and skin and flesh. Are we
internal
talking
tears?
About. Are we talking the point of entry?
Yeah.
The garage door?
Yeah, the garage door tear.
Oh.
And
the carport?
They were at the top of the list. And small tears, it says, usually heal on their own. But when it comes to large tears, you need to go see a doctor. And one way to prevent future cuts.
I think any tear warrants a trip to the doctor.
One way to prevent future cuts is lubrication.
Yes.
They're saying.
Can you use like one of those shoe expanders?
The shoe tree?
Yeah.
I give it a go.
Just to make sure.
Mm-hmm. So they said survey participants also reported that they suffered from carpet burn during sex.
I've had that.
Yeah.
And then what you do is in the moment of bliss, you're unaware. It's like when you come in after being outside in the cold and you scratch because it's itchy and you don't realize just how much you're scratching until everything warms up again.
Yeah. You don't realize.
So in the heat of passion, oh my God, I've whittled my kneecaps down to the bone.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't it Marilyn, formerly from the Preston and Steve show?
Yes.
She was in a hot tub,
right? Hot tub. It was a wooden hot tub.
Yeah.
And she like, the same situation.
Yeah. And her nickname was Knees after
Knees,
that, I
guess.
Yeah.
But she gave us this information. It was like we found it secondhand.
No. She absolutely told that story. And then you have the broken penis, which happens during intercourse. And that can be extremely painful, and it could sometimes require surgery.
Have you ever come close to it?
I've had that moment where it's like, oops.
Yes.
Don't do that again. Yes.
Mine was in a car door. It wasn't having sex.
Oh, dear God.
No, it was, it is, this it's part of life, and these are the kind of things you can encounter, but it can be very dangerous, and it can be very debilitating things that occur.
Yeah, there was a guy who actually... What's his name? Ross Asdorian, a New York City-based video producer, suffered one after a college hookup gone awry. And it says he had he wrote a memoir called Broken Banana. And it was 4 months, two surgeries, and $60,000 medical bill.
4 months, two surgeries?
Yeah.
Can you imagine that joy?
That's pretty nasty.
What kind of donut do you sit on when you've had that?
Yeah. Let me go to Dalton. Hey, Dalton, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's up, buddy?
Hey, so I just wanted to share my story.
Yeah.
I didn't break my banana, luckily, but I did have a pretty serious injury.
During the act, what happened?
Yeah. So it was
animal style. Can I say that?
Yeah, yes. Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Cool. We'll assume we're speaking of maybe of the canine variety.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You see where it's going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I had a torn meniscus, but that wasn't holding me back at the time. I got kind of low. The bed was lower.
Yeah.
So I got kind of low, and I was executing a pelvic thrust.
Right.
And
you knew the Russian judges were going to be hard, so you're giving it your all.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I went for it, and I felt the pop. I laid down in the bed, and I was just kind of writhing there for a minute.
Yeah.
And
what part of your body had hurt?
Oh, it was my ACL.
Oh, your ACL. Yeah.
That's not how you spell penis.
No, it was his knee, dude. No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But no, you know what? You know what, Dalton? That popping sensation is what has been described when you have the phallic crack,
break.
The break.
Yeah.
That there's it's like a bubble wrap almost.
I felt it in my knee, and I would not want to feel that anywhere closer to my groin.
That's so what was your recovery like? I mean, an ACL, that's not playing around. That's a bad injury.
Well, right now I'm 6 weeks out of surgery, and I'm just getting the brace off.
How long ago did this happen?
It was over the summer.
Wow!
But I only got gotten surgery pretty recently.
And when you're in the throes of it, Dalton, you're in the pleasure realm, and you're not aware of how perhaps overextended you are, or right? Isn't that the experience?
Oh, I was lost in the moment.
Absolutely. Hey, let me ask you this, Dalton. Not unlike certain people, you know, people who may have had a bad experience with tequila, they can no longer drink it again. Are you now staying away from this animal position, or do you think you might someday have the gumption to go at it again?
Well, I could tell you, when I had the brace on, and after about 4 weeks of PT, I started feeling pretty strong.
Yeah.
So we went at it and with nothing but the brace on, and I'm happy to report that there was no re-injury.
There you go. Okay. Though I would have felt, I agree with you. I know what you're saying, Preston, though.
You got right back on that horse.
I had food poisoning from pork lo mein.
Yeah.
I haven't eaten it since.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know. Yeah.
It can happen.
Yeah, and having sex with pork lo mein could be a difficult thing, too.
Thank you, Dalton. Appreciate it. We go to, you'd make sure it's not really hot.
Take the chopsticks.
I'm going to go to Brian. Brian, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. You guys rock.
Thanks, man. What's up, Brian?
Not much, man. I also have a little story about the same kind of animal position.
Okay. I love that.
We're going kind of at a downward angle. Everything's going
yes.
great.
Yeah.
You know, she's, going a little bit crazy.
Right.
But she kind of whips her head back, and I'm leaned down at the time, and the top of her head catches my chin, I guess, on the right angle.
Dude, she hit the button, yeah.
My face plants into the carpet, dead weight, snoring, out cold in the carpet, drooling.
She knocked you out.
She hit the button.
Knocked me out cold.
Oh, you were knocked out?
Dude.
I had rug burn on my face.
Oh, my God.
That is sensational. You know, it's horrible in the moment, but what a story you have.
I wonder... Yeah. I wonder what her sensation was like. All of a sudden,
she
stood up and went, ding, ding.
But all of a sudden, dead weight flattens her to the ground.
Seriously.
Wow. Damn, I'm good.
I mean, we are married, 10 years, three kids later, so it all ended up working out. But, that story comes up all the time whenever anyone wants to talk about an awkward encounter.
Brian, it had to be at exactly the right/wrong angle and to lay you out like that. But that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Brian.
I don't know if I don't know if you guys remember, but it was a friend of mine that you all know who was hooking up with a girl. She came out of the closet in lingerie and she kind of was excited. So she jumped on, kind of gave like a little hop onto the bed. Well, she jumped, I guess, a little bit harder than she thought. And she catapulted off and into the windowsill and knocked herself out. Wow.
Oh my God.
And the guy was just standing there and he was like, oh my God. And he had to, obviously he helped her and then. Nothing ended up happening because she had a huge egg on her head. She knocked herself out.
That's hilarious.
Laid her in the bed. And then,
who is it? Can you jump down?
No, I cannot. I cannot say who it is, but I will tell you off air.
Okay.
I will tell you. You can write it down. I promise I won't say it. But the maybe that's a good course of action, Preston. If you're going to have sex on a particular bed for the first time, mm-hmm. kind of jump on it a little bit. See the give on.
See what you're dealing with
before you end up like one of the flying Willendas.
I will go to. Hang on, let me see the name. Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. He was the guy.
Wow. All right, let me go to Mark. Hey, Mark, good morning.
We're not going
to
say exactly who.
No, no.
Why not? Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. What's up, buddy?
Dad broke my ankle.
What?
Fractured my ankle in the Poconos. My wife and I went up to the Poconos and...
Is that the position or where you were?
Where we were.
Okay. Were you in a champagne hot tub, by the way?
No. In a regular hard-ass little bed.
That's the other room. Hard-ass little bed. Yeah. There are two suites, champagne and hard-ass little bed. All right.
Yeah, it was awful.
And do you have in common the position that the other callers were talking about?
No, this was the missionary position.
Okay. All right.
Yes. And my wife is...
vocal?
Listen.
In his realm, you did a good job. You tried, and from where what you could have said, believe it or not, we can't even say that.
What?
So,
right.
No, but it's Mark. I'll fix you. Yeah, she's a sprinkler.
Right.
Yes. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Like a sparkle.
Right.
Yeah.
We usually have a mat of some sort down to catch it.
Good Lord.
Why don't you just do it in a children's wading pool?
Oh my God.
And she didn't want to, so she pushed me off.
Oh, my God.
And when she pushed me off, I went right back onto my ankle.
Oh, my God.
Dude, this has so many levels.
So.
I don't know what to do with it.
I'm trying. Listen, we have to keep the FCC license. As the one who's the joker. I can't even get a credit card in this one.
Mark, when you tell this story to your friends, how do you tell it? Is your wife cool with you telling this story?
He usually gets up and says, Pastor, I have something to tell you.
My wife would kill me if I did that.
Oh, so you go on the radio.
She'd be okay with that.
Wow. So how bad was the injury, Mark?
What's that?
How bad was the injury?
It was a bad fracture. It wasn't broken.
Of the ankle. That's painful. Yeah.
That is very painful, especially at that angle when you're trying to dodge the fire hose.
Yeah, you're all soaking wet.
Oh, my God.
The next morning.
I just took the ice bucket challenge.
Oh, my God.
I woke up and got out of bed and fell on the floor. I'm like, what happened? What is wrong?
Realize it till the next day that you were in that bad of pain.
But that's a good point, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
So many of these occur and you do not realize it until the morning after you've, right? Like rug burns and...
You know, when we go to work every day, you never know what kind of stories you're going to get or what comedy you're going to get out of Steve. And
wow.
Then you get stories like that.
Like that. That reaffirms your faith.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I wish that was just, you know, how do I put this delicately?
Yeah.
She's
a female. You can't say
it. Yeah. All right. Anyhow, let's go to a couple other calls here. Wow. All right.
Yeah,
let me go to Adam. Hi, Adam. Good morning.
Hey, you guys rock.
Thank you, Adam. What's up, buddy?
I am so glad that this is a live show and not, you know, recorded because you're traveling. I have the funniest story that anybody's ever heard.
Okay.
A friend of mine from college, he moved. I live in Delaware. He had come to University of Delaware from New York. He moved down here, went to college, and then he moved back after college. We kept in contact, and I talked to him this one time. I was like, hey, how's it going? He's like, oh, I'm doing all right. I'm on my way home from the hospital. I was like, what happened? He's like, well, we went out to dinner last night, my girlfriend and I, and I proposed. She accepted. We go home, you know, back to the apartment. We start celebrating and, you know, we're making out on the couch and we start going at it. And, you know, we're really into it because we're celebrating.
Yeah.
And I'd forgotten that I bought some furniture.
Okay. He bought some furniture and he forgot about it. Okay.
So he picks her up off the couch and throws her down on the coffee table. But the coffee table is now a glass top coffee table.
No.
So let me ask you quickly, what existed before the glass top coffee table? Just a regular wooden coffee table?
Just a wooden, yeah.
Okay.
So he throws her through the glass. She happened to be fine because of the way that she landed.
Right.
Lucky.
He was coming down and hit his head on the edge of the wooden frame that held the glass and gashed his forehead. So I was like, oh, my God, that sucks. you know, it totally ruined your evening. He's like, are you kidding me? She held my shirt on there so we could finish.
She held the shirt on his head wound so they could finish.
What a woman.
Right. So once
he chose wisely.
Yeah, 15 stitches across his forehead.
Oh, my God.
Could you imagine? So, all right, you raise a whole bunch of different stories concerning non-traditional locations in the house and injuries that are incurred.
And kudos to your friend, Adam, for being able to finish things off with a 15-stitch gash in his head before he even went to the doctor.
I get thrown off if the cat comes in the room.
Right? You're right. All right, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Wow.
Could you imagine that? You throw your partner through a glass coffee table, and you still manage to complete?
Wow.
That's long.
No. He's a hero.
How come you never hear about that?
They're both heroes.
In love songs.
Let's see. Wow, we got a bunch. I didn't even know we were going to get all this.
No.
As phone calls go this morning. Let me go to Dave, because he called like 15 minutes ago and worked with an ambulance company. Hi.
Dave!
Dave, you're on the air.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
It was only 13 minutes ago I called, but we're good.
Okay, fair enough.
I've been working in EMS for 25 years, and you know they always say once you think you've seen it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So years ago, I go out to this ambulance call. My partner and I go out, and they just send us out because they say it's an emergency transportation. Okay. They're like, okay, there's no information in this. We get into the house. We knock on the door. We wait for the cops to get there. Nobody's answering the door. We finally get into the house, and we go up to the bedroom, and we see this guy on top of this woman. And they're just there. We're like, what the hell are we walking into?
Huh.
And we come to find out that they were sitting there, they're having sex. And we find out that the condom they were using, she had a reaction to, and she swelled.
Oh, my God. My when they got goodness.
Stuck? They were stuck.
Like cats.
Well, yes. So
I've actually had.
And they were like, how the hell are we supposed to do this? We try getting them off each other. She was swelled up so tight around him, he thought he was going to lose it.
Whoa.
I have never heard about this. Now, to that point, animals sometimes, in fact, my own dog, Chelsea, got it on sort of with the neighborhood dog. And at a certain point, nature dictates that they lock to complete. But I've never heard about this. Yeah, was it a latex reaction?
Yes, she had the latex allergy. She swelled up around him. He lost all circulation.
Oh my God!
Put them both on a stretcher and get him to the hospital. And the coup de grace for it, the hospital had to call their spouses.
Oh no! They were having an affair.
That's a legit story.
That's
Dave.
Legit. Are you sure?
It's legit. This is no BS. I can't make this crap up.
Okay.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
That's
That is the worst thing I've ever seen. We stayed at the hospital until they were actually able to get them off of him. He didn't lose anything, but other than his marriage, probably. But
yeah. So Dave, let me ask you this.
I don't even want to imagine it.
Dave, the technicality of getting two people onto one gurney. How did you do that?
We had to call the fire department out. We had to get a bunch of people out there to get them up. They weren't that tiny.
You guys don't carry love gurneys? Like love seats?
No, love gurneys. Okay. We wanted a heart-shaped stretcher for them. We couldn't find one.
Thanks, Dave.
Just for those very intimate moments.
I think the spouses came and said, you know what, guys? I think you have learned your lesson. And you're in trouble enough.
Oh,
right?
Really?
Yeah.
You think
yeah.
so?
Yeah.
Well, everybody's
yeah.
understanding.
Maybe they didn't have supper that night. They got sent to their rooms, but.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that I had no idea that that could happen to that level. Mm-hmm. And I'm almost I believe him. He says he says it's true.
Yeah.
But it's right at the line.
Did it happen? Wait, I can't remember the beginning of the story. Did he witness this or did he hear about it?
He said he went to it.
Oh, that's right.
He was there.
Because you're always suspect when you go, oh, my friend told me.
He said 25 years in the business and he's
Sasquatch
never seen
told me.
Yeah. I'm going to go to Dave. Hi, Dave. Good morning. You don't have to hit the sound effect. Gadzooks, buddy. What's up?
Hey, I got a neck injury I incurred one time giving a lady oral pleasure. She decided that I hit a good spot and shifted left, and I heard a pop and spent 6 weeks in a neck brace.
In a neck brace. And so
2 weeks of work.
So did you ever have to fully, or did you offer a clarification as to how you injured your neck? At work.
not at work, but I did have to tell the female ER doctor what happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, not, I believe your story, but that
jerk wasn't an explanation for her.
That's a whole plot line in Chasing Amy. They talk about injuries that happen while going down on partners and whatever. And so, like, Jason Lee and the other lady go back and forth talking about those types of stories. And it's a funny part in Chasing Amy.
Interesting. Dave, how is your neck now?
Well, this was about 20 years ago, so I'm back in the game. And better.
Back in, right. Better than ever.
All right.
Thanks, Dave, the overachiever. let's go to, okay, we'll go to, Dana. Hi, Dana, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, what's up, Dana?
Okay, so my husband is Pip Freak.
Oh, yes, yeah. We know Pip Freak.
Oh, hi, Dana. Pip Freak is, he came in and tried to break the world record for body piercings. It was insane.
Like 1,600 or something.
It was crazy.
Yeah, and today's his 40th birthday.
Ah!
If you're listening, baby, I'm going to air our dirty laundry.
All right, go ahead. Let's hear it. What happened?
Okay, so the other night, like about a week ago, we were in the hot tub. And, you know, it's now that we have a baby, it's a little difficult, you know, to get some privacy. So that's kind of where we, you know, have some fun. And he got a little carried away. And I ended up with, like, internal injuries, like, on my right side, like, up by my heart and my shoulder, because he got a little carried away, and I was bent over the edge of the hot tub.
Uh-huh.
And
here goes that position again.
Yeah.
I know, right?
Yeah.
And
I'm
still, like, and it still hurts. And, like, I couldn't sneeze. I could barely breathe. Like,
did you fracture ribs?
I don't know. It's a good possibility. He was like, well, why don't you go to the doctor? And I'm like, I'm not going to the doctor. I think I'll be okay. And, you know, so, but yeah, he was like, he felt so bad. And he's like, I'm sorry. I'm like, it's not your fault. We still have fun.
And so you had bruising and so forth?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It was wild. And like I said, like, I'm still kind of recovering. Did you, and I'm like, oh, geez.
Did you know it at the time or did you feel it the day after?
Yeah. No, as 2 days later.
Okay. Oh. See, there you go. They sneak up on you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks. Thanks, Dana. Give Pip Freak our best. We'll see you later.
I will.
All right. Yeah. Well, apparently it's very, very common to hurt yourself in the middle of the act. And
I suspected some certain, I think you and I were thinking, okay, common injuries that you would expect.
Yeah.
Nothing like what we've been hearing.
No. I mean, this we're talking about the most common are small tears.
Yeah.
And then you have carpet burns.
Right.
As well.
Not getting stuck.
Not being thrown through a glass window.
By a jet spray.
Or something. Yes. Oh, my God. That was.
Yeah. Let me see if I can frame this delicately.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Interesting. So the
wallpaper came off.
The moral is just be careful, be aware of your surroundings.
Abstinence.
Complete 100% abstinence from sex for the rest of your life.
There you go.
And you'll be okay.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
News. The Record Company.
New music, more of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
A gas station owner has placed a sign in his store asking customers not to warm urine in the microwave.
Oh. Well, how are you going to warm it?
I know. What do they expect of you?
Stovetop, like they used to do in the olden days.
In a big pot. Yeah, a big pot, but that's still a lot of work.
Perel Patel says that he's become sick and tired of people walking into his BP gas station and on-the-fly convenience store in Jacksonville to warm their containers of piss.
Wait a second. Is he putting up a fuss over the turd geladas?
There's no word on that. The store is within walking distance of two labs, though one says that it doesn't collect samples for drug tests.
Uh-huh.
Patel says that the people walk in off the street, they microwave the urine containers, and then they leave. Warming urine from someone who hasn't taken drugs is seen by some as a way to help pass a drug test. Patel says that a woman became aggressive a few months ago when he asked her not to warm her urine, and she asked to see a sign that says it's not for that purpose.
This is still America, isn't it?
So he made one right then and there.
I'm sorry.
me as the consumer would never use a microwave that had a don't heat up your piss sign on it.
That's true. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyhow, he's had to do it because people were doing it.
Yeah. All right. I think just get rid of the microwave at this point.
Some cyclists in North Carolina were nearly hit by a flying deer after the animal was struck by a car, and it was all captured on video. The collision occurred as Peter Fleur and four friends were finishing a 45-mile bike ride. Mounted cameras on the front and rear of Fleur's bicycle captured the incident. As the group approached an intersection, a large deer sprinted across the road in front of lead cyclist Missy Mansfield and was struck a split second later by a dark-colored Audi traveling in the opposite direction. The car sent the deer hurtling through the air and back across the double yellow line. Cyclist Melanie Norris can be seen ducking while trying to keep her bike steady. She said, "I look up and I saw this thing flying at us." Fleur said afterward, "For a few seconds, I didn't even know what it was. It just happened so fast at that very instant. We just didn't know." Fleur said he believes the deer did not survive, but can't be sure. The driver of the Audi continued on without stopping.
You feel so bad when you see it. You know, we used to see it all the time when we were out in media, Preston.
Yeah.
And there was a stretch of road where you'd see him get clocks. It's just horrible.
I don't think there's any way that this deer survived.
Yeah, I think you're right, Nick, and that's the one thing that's making me okay with this.
But this deer almost...
killed her.
Almost killed one of the bikers.
And it has happened where a deer that has hit a vehicle has gone through the windshield and killed the driver.
Most definitely. I printed a picture of this so you guys could see it here in the studio. Yay. You may have to do a little research and check on it for yourself at home. But America's reigning hickey king was sentenced this week to his latest run-in with the law. This is his mugshot.
Right.
You guys would like to see that.
It's a lot of hickeys.
Oh, my.
Someone's very romantic.
Kentuckian Micah Musser was placed into a 5-year diversion program in order to enter a rehab treatment facility once a bed becomes available. Musser pleaded guilty last month to burglary and criminal mischief charges filed after his recent arrest arrest in late March. He's been locked up in the county jail since his collar. Now, he first appeared last year when he was arrested by Louisville cops who discovered him and several teenage runaways inside an abandoned building. Police reported that the floor of the boarded-up property was strewn with empty alcoholic beverage containers. When booked into the county jail last June, Musser's neck was adorned with an array of fresh hickeys.
I'm popular with the ladies.
When busted in his most recent criminal case, his neck had returned to a pristine state. But he looks like a leopard around his neck.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't you report that
it can kill you?
It can kill you.
Yeah, if somebody is giving you a hickey and they do it on your artery or something like that, it can be bad. It can be very, very bad. A newcomer to San Francisco has created a free app to make it easier for people to report poop and use needles on the city's famous...
It's a beautiful city, that San Francisco.
Dirty streets. Hey, everybody.
Absolutely.
Hey, it's Tony Bennett.
To be back. Absolutely.
Tony Bennett.
Poop and hypodermic needles. God, I miss that city.
Sean
Big Miller. Piles of poop, and then you can adorn them with the used hypodermics and build little forts. It's wonderful around the holidays.
Sean Miller.
Just get close to Christmas and hang tinsel around the hypodermics that are sticking out of the huge poop piles. Christmas in San Francisco.
You could fashion a tree out
absolutely
of poop and then have the hypodermics.
Hey, watch this, Rockefeller Center. We got you beat. 50 feet high pile of poop with hypodermics and glittering balls. It's magical.
Sean Miller moved to San Francisco. From Vermont. After
don't worry, if you run out of hypodermics, there's probably a dead bum next to you with one in his arm. Just pull it on out and add it to the decorations. Magical, that city.
Sean Miller moved to San Francisco from Vermont after college last year and says that he was astonished by the amount of public grime.
Streets are paved with poop and hypodermics, as promised.
His Snapcrap app was released over the weekend for iOS users and declares itself the fastest way to request cleaning in San Francisco. He said, basically, the app's description said, see something gross, just snap a photo and press submit. The photos are passed to the city.
That's what I usually tell my dominatrix.
The photos are passed to the city's Public Works Department and Tony Bennett.
Absolutely.
Which has its own 311 app and reports feces and trash as well as potholes and graffiti.
What about vomit?
I don't know about vomit.
That's disgusting.
Well, the last time I was in San Fran, I was in a restaurant.
He's better than that.
I was grabbing breakfast, and in the stall next to me, a homeless gentleman walked in,
yeah,
got sick all over the stall, and then went in and took a bath in the sink.
Mm.
I was
nasty. Call me when you have something about poop.
Miller, who lives and works downtown, says that downloads have been in the few hundreds as of now.
Hey, it's fall. It's time for the annual poop walk.
A San Francisco leader.
Turns as far as you can see, adorned in the colors of the season.
San Francisco leaders have been grappling with the state of the city's dirty streets.
You know what's great, Preston? As the blood dries on the hypodermics, it gets that auburn color we associate with the changing of the leaves. Then as the turds get bleached in the San Francisco sun, oh, it's glorious.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
I left my
heart. San Francisco leaders have been grappling.
I got to get back there and take a poop.
With the state of the city's dirty streets, and there were more than 24,300 requests last year for human waste cleanup. Wow.
I got to say,
how many?
24,300.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Nick, I know that people who have been there recently who say, now mind you,
it depends where you are.
Where you are in the areas that rely on tourism. It has been one of the most beautiful cities to walk around.
I love it.
But it's, dear God, I saw some shots of the press and you would have thought you were in a third world country. It's horrible.
I believe it. I mean, listen, it does get kind of cold, but in some spots in California, it's outdoor all the time and, you know.
Almost as
poop
an
away.
Issue.
Poop away.
Yeah.
Poop away.
So.
Rice-a-roni.
Miller.
Really makes you regular, you know.
Poop-a-roni.
Poop-a-roni.
Yeah.
San Francisco treat. Cable cars, Golden Gate Bridge, and poop as far as you can see.
Miller says he's adding features to the app and hopes to work with the city to improve a very San Francisco problem. So, all right. And there you go. That's what I have for you in the bizarre file. Thank you. I was hoping that Tony.
Oh, Tony would have to come back.
I included that story hoping that Tony would make an appearance this morning.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
Brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. New handcrafted espresso drinks from Dunkin' are amazing. Sipping is believing. Get any medium latte or cappuccino for $2 from 2 to 6 p.m. America runs on Dunkin'. Participation may vary. Limited time offer.
What's going on this morning, Steve?
Well, MTV reality star turned porn actress Farrah Abraham seen out on a romantic date with Rebel Wilson's former boyfriend, stuntman at Aiden Stay. Stay says Abraham is a perfect match for him because he's always wanted a woman with a walk-in rectum.
Oh, my God.
Mystery swirling around 76-year-old New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft and his 36-year-old girlfriend Ricky Noel, who just gave birth to a baby that's not his, even though they've been dating for 5 years. Kraft attempted to explain the weird situation to a group of paparazzi, saying, quote, Ricky's legs open faster than a new Starbucks.
Oh, my God.
And finally, Fox is belatedly airing an O.J. Simpson interview he did years ago for that bizarre book he did called If I Did It, Confessions of a Killer, in which he says he, quote, hypothetically had an accomplice in the murders of Nicole Brown and Ronald Goldman. Said Simpson, quote, if I did it, which I didn't, but I know how I would have done it, but I didn't do it because I didn't do it.
What?
And that's your Hollywood Trash.
I have been told by our executive producer to say the following phrase and to play the following music.
Okay.
So just bear with me on this. Let's get down to the nitty gritty. Let's get the show on the road.
Yes.
And ladies and gentlemen, we have Scott Rogowski.
Yeah.
Good morning, Vietnam.
Scott, why did Casey tell me to say those words and to play this music?
Because, well, that is the phrase that pays on HQ.
Yeah.
That is my...
You are a Fish fanatic, by the
that
way.
That is a lyric I've took from Fish and turned into a national catchphrase that has taken America by storm.
It is, yes.
And by the way, I recognized the bed music on the traffic report earlier, First Tube. Yep. Who picks out the music here?
Well, all the fishes, Casey lives, breathes, and eats fish. And we actually had, I know you're a big fan of Trey.
Yeah.
We had, it was Casey's dream. We had Trey Anastasio in for a long form interview a couple of years ago.
Like two songs acoustic on
air. No way. Yeah. And Casey was dressed as a bride.
Well, I actually didn't end up putting the dress on.
We just did your makeup.
We did my makeup.
Hair.
He is beautiful. So enamored of Trey.
Well, I have confirmation that, and this is one of the greatest days of my life when I got this text that Trey plays HQ.
No. Okay.
With his daughter.
With his daughters,
right?
Yes. Wow. The story was I was supposed to go to Curveball, which was their big festival that got canceled because of the flooding upstate in New York.
Which was a disaster.
I mean, I was all set to go. And it was, so when that all fell apart, I was bummed out. And I was in touch with their management a little bit. And then I invited Trey on to HQ. We had a little music edition. And I said, well, you know, maybe you can kind of, since he's not going upstate, you can kind of maybe apologize or say something to the fans. It'd just be a nice thing to come on the show. And he couldn't do it, but his manager forwarded me a text that Trey sent. Hey, personalized. Hey, Scott, you know, sorry I can't do it, but, man, I got to say, when I first heard you dropping Fish lyrics, it blew my mind on HQ. You know, my daughters love you.
Wow.
Can't wait. You know, P.S., the game's too hard. But, like, to get a text, I framed that text now.
That is so cool.
So, Scott, for those who may not be familiar with HQ who are listening to this interview right now,
I
don't play it. I've heard about it from these guys. I've never been on board. Explain it to people who don't know what
it is. Sure, yeah. It's a live trivia game that you play on your phone. We go live 9 o'clock Eastern time and sometimes 3 p.m. Eastern time during the week. And what happens is you download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, free to download, and you get a push notification. When we go live with the games, I pop up on your phone, and I'm asking 12 trivia questions, and you can win $5,000 if you answer them all correctly. You win a share of that. This Monday night, we're doing a $100,000 game for Emmy night.
Okay.
And that's going to a single person. Usually, you know.
A single person.
One winner takes all with the winners. Usually it's a pot that gets split. But Monday night is a one winner takes all $100,000 game.
Where does the money come from?
I work offshore. I work a day shift at Denny's to pay for this.
It's a lot of moons over my head.
Yeah, a lot of moons. But no, it's venture capital. We have Target sponsoring that game on Monday. So it's a traditional. We got a Target.
Target fan. Yeah. Well, how do you end up with one winner? So I assume it doesn't.
I don't stop asking questions until we have one person. That's right. That's going to be. It's going to be a lot of work for me. We've done it a few times before. Gotten to like 27 questions.
Yeah.
So I've heard that and this has been, I vetted this, that a few people who have won have sort of said the same thing. You benefit by playing with a collective of varying, different, specific
multi-generational.
Levels. Multi-generational will help you. In fact, I think that's Dan Rather himself said.
That's right. Dan Rather's one of our famous HQDs who won on Christmas, I think he was playing. And he won with the help of his daughter and his grandson.
Wow.
And there's the three of them, because, you know, the first question was about Kendrick Lamar.
Yes.
And Dan answered that one. No. I mean,
I'm a huge fan of Kendrick.
Yes. His grandson answered that one. But then there's a question about Watergate.
Well, how soon did you know that it was Dan Rather that won? Like, immediately?
No. Well, that was he blogged about it on Facebook.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and he wrote this whole long thing about it. And you know, it's amazing how this has proliferated and, you know, clearly hasn't gotten to you, but Lance Armstrong is playing HQ. Norm MacDonald plays
Norm
HQ, who I saw last night about 4 hours ago.
We were talking about it.
Yeah. I'll tell you why I don't, because I'll never win. I never will. And I know that, and I'll sit there and I'll be pissed off that I didn't win, and
that's
fair. Do it. So, you know.
That's fair. Stephen Colbert said the same thing.
Wait a second, though. It is very, let's say, Tournament of Champions, Jeopardy, and then some. But if you can still derive pleasure from watching that, and even if you know that it's still perhaps a little bit out of your wheelhouse, you play Jeopardy all the time, you still derive pleasure from it. You can still derive pleasure from this even if you are being crushed.
I'll tell you what. I've never won, and I love playing. And I play as much as I can. I often play with my girlfriend, and it's something that, you know, if we're playing at 9 o'clock on a Tuesday night, it's just something to help pass the time. And I do think that you would like it because you are good at trivia, even if you end up not winning. But it's something where you don't have to play every night, and I look forward to the time where I win $1.78 that I share with everybody, but like I don't care whether or not I win or lose.
Yeah, that's the you mentioned Jeopardy. Yeah, people watch Jeopardy for 30 years. They've watched Jeopardy.
Right.
And they don't have any skin in the game. Mm-hmm. This actually lets you be a contestant on your phone.
Yeah.
From wherever you are. You don't have to be sitting on your couch. You could be, people have played from sporting events, weddings. People send me pictures, you know, everywhere. Hiking mountains are playing on top of.
Not a big time suck.
No, it's 12, 15 minutes in and out, and maybe you win some money.
And you have to type in the answer, or is it multiple choice?
Okay. Yeah, three answers pop up, and you have 10 seconds to tap it. There are extra lives, you know. Maybe Steve can give me an extra life.
This is a big word-of-mouth thing, right?
Yeah.
So I had heard about it from my brother, and Nick had heard about it separately from I don't know where he heard about it, and then, you know, we were talking about it. Nick, what's the farthest you've ever gotten?
9, I think.
Wow.
And 12 is the usual.
12 is the usual.
And I've played the games where it goes until, I think there was a $25,000 winner, and you just keep going.
Some guy won 25 grand sitting on the toilet.
That's the way to do it.
That's the way to do it.
Scott, you're a really good host, and you are a big part of the game, and part of the appeal of the game is your humor and your ability to interact with fans. And so I'm curious as to how much prep goes into every night, how much writing is done ahead of time, and then how much of it is on the fly.
Yeah, I could be better and prepare it days, weeks in advance. It's out there. You know, the questions are kind of locked in. But I pretty much look at it about an hour or two before
the
game. And
that makes sense because like at a certain point,
I don't want to have it so rehearsed.
You've got to be on the, and that's the charm of it. It's a very organic Jeopardy feel where the rigidity of that game. It's similar, but it's a lot more free flowing.
Look, can we be honest? And can I fire some shots here? I mean, Alex Trebek. Look, we all love him, but why? Why do we love him? What does he do exactly?
He hosts Jeopardy.
Yeah, he just but is he funny?
No,
but he does a great French accent, you know?
I mean, what does he bring to the table? Let's be honest.
He brings some condescension to the table.
Yeah, if anything, he's a little rude to his guests.
He's a little
guests.
Snarky.
He does bring awfully wonderful pronunciations with the proper dialects, though.
Uh-huh.
He does do that.
That's a riot. That's a laugh riot. <Yeah. laughs>
I saw a special with him. He was the guest for an hour, and they were kind of going over his life, and he apparently was a ladies' man and so on and so forth. But the thing, and then Preston knows this, I talk about it all the time, I love the show, but the interview with the contestants is excruciating because he'll go over and he goes, I understand you've purchased ribbon. and it's just horrible. It comes to a screeching halt.
Oh, but what I like is, so he'll go to one guest who's climbed Mount Everest, and then the next person's like,
I collect glass eyes.
I collect glass eyes. Yeah. I didn't climb out.
That's Stuart Scott.
Yeah, you fought off a great white shark with a melon bowler. Yeah. Interesting. Now you, it's like he doesn't know where to prioritize.
You like Lucky Charms.
Yeah.
This is why I should be the next host of Jeopardy. Let's make it happen here.
He has floated out.
He's retiring.
He has floated out. Now, I assume, has anyone back channel wise come to you and said, listen, is this something that we should consider you for as we start to consider?
There might have been some deep throat,
in a parking garage
scenario. A lot of trench coats involved. I have my gig. He still has his gig. We'll see. We'll see what happens. It's I'm going to let destiny play out. Destiny Unbound.
You might have to actually deep throat someone. never know.
That's Ajax.
So Scott, you've co-hosted with Mark Summers, who's a friend of the show, and Mark is a fan of yours as well. And I knew you grew up being a big Double Dare fan.
Yeah.
Besides Mark, what other celebrity co-hosts have you had?
Wow. The first ever was Christy Yamaguchi.
There's so cool.
Yeah. For our Winter Olympics show. And then we had Robert De Niro stop by for Tribeca Film Fest.
Amazing.
Promotion. John Mayer was...
He's a big fan.
He's a massive fan.
Yeah, he's also... He was playing with the Grateful Dead right now, another favorite band of mine. So that was, for me, a personal favorite because I wrote these little Grateful Dead lyrical hints between... segues between each question, Uncle John's band, and now we're going to question. So, I forgot what they were, but they were whimsical and they were rhyming.
Well,
John was loving it, and we sang some Neil Young. We sang "Old Man." It was Father's Day. I had my dad show up that day, and we had me, John Mayer singing. I was playing guitar. John wouldn't play guitar, so
you're
had to
pretty
play
good.
Guitar. I was decent.
So let me ask you: you are a jam band fan, you are obviously a Fish fan.
Shameful.
Well, what's the largest loss of memory you ever encountered at a Fish concert?
I will be honest with you guys. Until very recently, I was always going to concerts sober.
Really?
I was never.
What changed?
What changed was a little thing called acid that I was introduced to.
You have no idea.
And then I went, and then it took me 32 years, but I realized, oh, this is why people go to fish shows. It actually makes it better. Because I was enjoying the music as is, and no one could understand why.
Yeah, right. Well, you're already in a good place.
I was in a great place, because I like the rock. You know, when they get real spacey and jammy, that's not my favorite. I just like the straight-ahead rock and roll stuff. You guys are a rock station. I mean, they got some songs that rock.
Sure.
And those are the ones. Like, I listen to Studio Fish. I like the studio albums.
So do I.
Some people like the, you know, 40-minute jam. You know, it's not really my... But when you're on acid, that starts to click for you.
Yeah, we got in a car years ago. I'm not going to tell everything about it, but when we got in... Casey used to have a thing. It was the Fishmobile, right?
It was my little brother's car. It was a little 1984 Honda Accord hashback.
I mean...
Now, we drove all the way up to Limestone, Maine, by the way.
I was there.
Lemon wheel both.
you're in a welcoming place here. So how much could you see yourself at some point? You know, so you're going to the concerts, but, you know, do you have to keep it in check? Could you see yourself at some point in a van, you know, going...
Being one of these guys who, like, just drops out and tours? No, because I keep things in perspective, and I realize that, you know...
Even with the acid?
I mean, it's you can't overdo that.
Right.
No, you'll lose your mind.
You'll lose your mind.
Yeah.
But,
sure.
But you know, it's a, for me at this point, honestly, because I'm listening to them for 15, 16 years, it's almost like a nostalgic thing. Like, you know, I don't particularly care for the new albums.
Right.
I kind of want to hear the old stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm now the old fan, I'm realizing, at these shows.
Oh, dude.
You know, which is so depressing.
They played a concert over at The Man a couple of summers ago. Yeah. And I'm walking in the lot, right? And some dude comes pulling in his minivan and his window's down, right? So, but that's me, right?
Yeah.
So I'm walking past this guy and his window's down. I go, yo, nice minivan, dork, right? And he just started laughing so hard because, I mean, it's so true. Because when we started going to concerts, I was going in my brother's 84 Accord hatchback. And, you know, and now I'm in a Honda Odyssey. And, you know, it's just kind of the way it is.
I mean, they're like grandpas now who are fish fans. Yeah. I mean, you can think about it. If you were 30 and 85.
Yeah, you're right. Do you ever have it's like that epiphany. I forget what we were talking about, but when you go to a concert and you look around and look at the crowd and like, Jesus Christ, is this me?
Yeah.
You know, so I can understand that fear.
It's a scary.
I saw there was an open letter to young fish fans from like somebody, an old head like me or you. It says, hey, I'm not a cop, right? So you can pass me the joint and you don't have to worry about it. Oh, man.
That's funny. HQ's a little trippy, though. I mean, like the intro was, I wouldn't say it's exactly an acid trip, but there's a little bit of trippiness to the HQ.
I'm wondering who plays HQ, you know, on altering substances.
A lot.
No, probably a lot.
Sure.
Yeah, 15 minutes, though. It should be something that has a quick strike and then dissipates.
A nitrous. Yeah.
Nitrous. That should be your sponsor.
That's it.
Some people do Vistaprint. You could do nitrous.
Yeah, Ready Whip.
So what's funny is I was turned on to HQ through my brother, and it was because of the fish references.
I'm a major fish celebrity now. There's so many surreal things that have happened over the past year, but just going to shows and meeting, you know, Tom Marshall, who's the co-writer with Trey for a lot of the songs. So I meet Tom at a Trey show in Central Park. Like, I'm in the VI. I get invited to be the VI. Yes.
Holy crap. Holy crud. It sounded like Norm for a second there.
Dirty dog. You done me wrong.
It turns out they like LSD.
I'm hanging with Tom Marshall now at the visual, and he's like, yeah, we all love you. Trey loves you. I'm like, oh, this is too much.
I got to talk to Tom Marshall at that same concert where I called the guy a dork in his minivan. And I'm like, dude, this is the guy who's written all these lyrics. Yeah. Everybody thinks Fish's lyrics are just nonsense and stuff. And
they are.
And they are. Not all of them, though. So I'm talking to him, and then the conversation ends. He starts walking away. I'm like, oh, wait a second. I go, did you write the lyric, Each Betrayal Begins with Trust? He's like,
oh, Jesus Christ, I got a clinger.
It's my favorite lyric of all time. And he turns around, he stopped in his tracks. He goes, yes, I did. And then he walked back to me. He goes, but I stole that lyric. It's actually Nathaniel Hawthorne. Line from some poem that he had written years and years and, you know, obviously
everything's stolen. Nitty gritty.
Shakespeare lines from something he wrote years ago.
Yeah. Right.
Hey, by the way, who is there's a reporter or an anchor for, is it CNN, who drops Fish Lyric.
Katie Turr.
Yeah.
On MSNBC.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
so yeah.
Katie
Turr.
Oh, that's funny.
Katie Turr is adorable. I mean, incredible.
I met her this past year.
She's super smart and she's girl next door attractive.
Yes. The former Mrs. Olbermann. I mean, they were never married, but they, Keith Olbermann, her dad.
Are you kidding?
No. They live together.
I've got vomit in the back of my head. That should not have happened.
She's happily married now, and I think with kids.
All right.
Someone else.
So, besides that, who else has blown your mind as far as an HQ fan?
I mean, I'm a huge baseball fan.
Yeah.
And you guys have a wonderful Jewish baseball player who's now managing your team, Gabe Kapler.
Yeah.
Cap, but I mean, second to Gabe Kapler and the greatest Jewish baseball players of my generation, Sean Green. And Sean Green was an early HQ adapter. He was, you know, Dodgers, Blue Jays, Mets.
You're a big Mets fan.
Big Mets fan.
I assume you've gotten some massive access, right?
I started hosting this thing called Mets Live with the Mets and like doing a Facebook show with them and talking to Conforto and Nemo and
do you know Jim Brewer?
Jim Brewer, I know of him.
Yeah. We should pair up because he does his live.
I threw the first pitch at Citi Field a couple weeks ago.
Wow.
And
it was a high strike on the corner. And I wanted, the story about that is, this was about a week after the nun threw at the first pitch.
Yes,
awesome.
And killed it.
Killed it. So I'm thinking, okay, it's been a week. It's just perfect timing. I'll dress like a nun. I'll throw at the first pitch. A little parody. I'll do the little ball thing, you know. And went out and bought a nun's outfit at a Halloween store the night before. Bring it to the ballpark. All ready to go. His first pitch is at 1:05. It's 12:35. I'm in the elevator going, like, hey, by the way, I brought this nun outfit. Can I wear that? And they're making calls. That's a hard no. I'm a nun. So they put the kibosh on the nun. What, is this a rabbi better? Should I do that?
A rabbi!
So I had a backup, though. I had a backup. I figured the nun might be a problem. I also bought a jar of Vaseline, nail file, cheese grater, stuffed in my pants. So I go out to the mound, and they're like, here's your pitch. Take your pitch. And before I did the pitch, I'd take out the nail file, start filing the ball.
Yeah, all the cheats.
Big thing of Vaseline, put it on there, and I was still with the Vaseline, which was a little slippery. Still threw a strike. Yeah. Very proud.
Nice.
Very proud of that.
I love the scene in Naked Gun where he's got it under the hat.
Yeah.
And Leslie Nielsen just puts it back on top of his head and taps his hat down.
That is cool. So from here, obviously, you know, and we've talked to you, the comedy videos and things that you've done as well. Is this parlaying into something else? Because it's big on its own. What do you have, like what's it up to, your estimated audience?
Yeah, I mean, we've had as many as 2.4 million playing simultaneously with The Rock. I mean, talk about the best co-host. I can't leave out The Rock.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Were you a wrestling fan at all?
Not too much, but, you know, I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, the jabroni thing, I was on board with that.
The jabroni, yeah.
I smelled what he was cooking. But he's just the most, just, you know, charismatic, magnetic personality. He looks everyone in the eye when he meets you.
Yeah.
He remembers your name. The guy, there's a reason why he's the highest paid actor and the most beloved person on earth right now.
They can
do no wrong.
Those guys do. We're watching a little clip from it. But those guys, all of those guys in the WWE, and we say it all the time, they are primed and trained to be super entertainers.
Yeah.
I mean, they know how to work live crowds.
Yep.
It's amazing.
Scott, I imagine that the number one complaint about HQ is the comments. Is that correct?
The comments? The chat going there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't see a need for it. I've been petitioning them to, like, at least make it default off. Right now, it's default on.
You
can swipe it away.
You can
swipe it right, and it'll disappear.
All right.
But people don't know that. I have to tell them every time to swipe it away. Why not just have it off
and
swipe it in?
It goes too fast, too.
I didn't know that until just now.
Well, I'm telling you, if you're listening now, you don't know. You can swipe the chat away. Swipe it away.
Okay.
Hey, real quick, how long has this been? Have you been live with this?
We just celebrated our first birthday, August 26th.
That's crazy.
Wow.
That is crazy.
1 year. 1 year.
So, all right. So when the first day, how many users did you have?
The first beta day, we had like 52 when we went beta. And then the first, when we got out of beta, was like 300.
52, and now you've had 2 million at a time.
Yeah.
Whose idea was this?
The two guys who started Vine. Do you remember Vine?
Yes.
Yeah.
They
short little videos.
HQ.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did they get in touch with you?
I auditioned for it.
No kidding. So they had like an open call of sorts, or?
It was like I don't know how many, I guess they auditioned like 15, 20 people.
And no kidding.
There's a guy, this is a good lesson. People ask, you know, for advice and stuff, because I've been doing this comedy crud for 13 years, and you know, pretty unsuccessfully. I mean, very under the radar.
It's all in context.
I was about to leave New York and move to LA and just start over, frankly.
Yeah.
But
I got a call from a guy that I worked with at The Onion 10 years prior.
You used to write for The Onion.
Yeah, yeah, I was an intern. I was a contributing writer. So, and, you know, met the guy there. Nice guy. We stayed in touch over Facebook, and I'd seen him over the years, and he'd sort of look out for me. I'd look out for him and jobs, and he looked out for me here and said, hey, I'm doing this thing with these new guys. These guys, I think you'd be good for it. You want to come in and audition? So it's just a lesson in networking, obviously, being nice to people, being a good dude, and working hard and staying with it. Because had I just given up, he wouldn't have called me. But he knows for the previous 10 years, I've been trying this thing.
Yeah.
And when the opportunity came knocking, he gave me a call.
It's incredibly sage advice. And yes, all those things. Do not burn bridges.
Keep doing it. Don't give up. If you really believe in yourself, and don't burn bridges and make friends.
Not to be too existentialist about it, but it is fairly remarkable that you can play a video game like this or a trivia game on your phone, at home, on the couch. I mean, it's like the technology exists for that many people to be playing at the same amount of time, that it doesn't buffer in a way that makes it impossible to play, that we can hear your commentary, and that everybody's able to log on and be a part of this community. And a fun community at that is fairly impressive.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. You know, I did Colbert this past year, too, which is another thrill for me to be a guest on that show. And I was telling him, and he kind of gave me some crap for it, because I was saying, like, this is science fiction made reality.
Yes.
And I was comparing it to the Wright brothers. you know, how, like, you know, they got, I mean, because we had some glitches and things, but to get that plane off the ground and keep it in the air, and now we have supersonic jets. But, like, it's the same kind of thing. We're the first ones doing this. And we're all sort of getting on this plane together. Sometimes it crashes, but for the most part, to get 2 million people up in the air for that long.
He was giving you crap?
Yeah, because he's like, is it real, Wright Brothers, really? Not overstating that a little bit. I'm like, I know. In this mobile streaming world, yes, we're the Wright brothers of mobile streaming.
And he's a Middle Earth nerd, so he can't give any crap about it.
Right.
Yeah, it is something. It's an amazing thing. And also to have that vision. But it's lightning in a bottle because, you know, it's execution, it's everything. Have you been approached by Netflix or a network for a network version or a version of this that exists in any of the streaming services? It seems like an obvious.
Yeah, well, I don't know how much I can say, but there are conversations happening about, yes, a television collab. That's perhaps.
There needs to be.
Yeah.
You right now draw more. You are with 2 million participants.
Yeah.
You're in the level of large cable ratings in the evening. You're every bit that.
Have you had a day off in the past year?
This is my day off. Taking a 5 a.m. train to Philadelphia. Grab a tasty cake and head back.
Listen, bacon products, too.
There
turkey
you go.
Bacon.
Yeah. Gotcha. You got to shout them out. Well, I'm also here to take the Rizzo statue back home. I'm taking Rizzo with me.
When would you think, if you were to tell us, I don't know how much you can tell us,
If we were
to see an iteration of this show on, as I said, a streaming service or whatever, if you were a betting man, when would that happen?
I don't know. I mean, these things do take time, as you know, to develop. But hopefully, you know, 2019 is around the corner.
Very nice.
This year's just flown by, right? Yeah. I mean,
you deserve it. You've been working hard at this stuff for a long time. And then to have this and to find... It's as perfect a fit for your skill set as you could possibly
ask
for.
Honestly, and it's what my parents tell me, and that's what I think, too. It's like... You know, I have these weird, my brain is kind of this weird sponge. I just take little bits of things from everything I listen to and watch. And now this is a repository. I can just spit it back out in front of a million people. And people sort of enjoy it. I mean, the fish stuff, the Big Lebowski quotes, like whatever it is.
Yeah. What about trivia in general? Have you become really, really sharp at that now?
I was pretty good. I've always been a fan of miscellany. And now, like, I've played HQ when I'm not hosting, and I have gotten to 11. Still haven't. I mean, it's hard.
Did you ever audition for any trivia television game show in your youth?
Yeah, okay. I haven't, but... Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego would have been my favorite.
There you go. It's tough, man. Where is that bitch?
I don't know. Where is she?
Scott, as a little parting gift for coming by, we have some tasty cakes.
Oh, you got them?
For you right there, sir.
Oh, my goodness. And peanut chews and Frank's soda. Frank's chew, you got it all?
We'll get it all for you,
water
man.
Ice?
We got loads of water ice. We'll get to stop by Rita's and get
you some.
Have
been them Eagles.
All right, well, listen, thanks for coming by, Scott. I'll check it out. I will get on board.
And Gabe Kapler, if you're listening, check it out, too. You're invited to the show. Daryl Hall, John Oates, everyone's invited.
Yes.
We'll get them on board. All right, let's hear
Rizzo.
Scott Rogowski, guys.
New, old, and everything in between. MMR rocks.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.